like the electric, nothing to do. And the sheep, they can get these sort of short grass. The cows, they use their tongue to take it off. And you can't, you know, you can't, a cow can't get to the grass when it is so short. So this is what makes it logical for our livestock farmers specifically. Next to the road, you can see it almost looks like the Ferrari in the tree structure. It was really not a nice picture. Some more loss of wind and sand. We've lost a lot of land on this way. This place is called Brownway's Kale, you know, like brandy. So I don't think they're going to have brandy there. It's a big piece of land, not planted. This was like early in the morning at 6:30, they were already bloody loading some animals for slaughtering. They have, you know, the farmers have sold a lot of their cattle during this period. One of the big stars there, this was one of the big fields that I saw, some sunflower just outside of the Yenneker on the way to Del Arrebo. They had early rain, like in September, and I think this was part of the so this farmer probably, what they do is they have a crop rotation system, we call it a fallow land system. So this year they don't farm from this piece of land to preserve the moisture. And then next year when you get a little bit of rain, the top moisture can meet the bottom moisture. Because the roots can't get to this sort of middle patch that they need to dry. So you need enough rain so that the roots can go through into the, what we call the water table soil in South Africa. It's a big part that is producing most of the food in the country that we call the water table soils. And they can preserve the moisture, but you need enough rain to just get through the first patch of it. So this farm probably used a fallow land system and planted some sunflower and it got through to the preserved moisture in the previous year. This is unfortunate, also a sad sight in South Africa where a lot of the railway lines are not functioning. So in 1980, when we still had the maize port and share, we were transporting about 85% of the grain by rail. Today, it is opposite way around, 85% by road and only 15% by rail. I think this is why we're messing up the road so much, because we have to transport all the grain by road and not by rail any longer. And the facilities are still there. This would make a huge difference, and traditionally the rails are a lot cheaper than the road transport. So this is one of the issues that we might, you know, consider in future. How do we get more grain onto the rail? And the thing was that it is very profitable for the Transnet freight rail to transport the coal, because if you're seizing, you pick it up at the mine and you take it to Richard Bay and you sell it off to China or whoever is buying it. But I guess also it's a little more difficult because this year it rains in this district and not in that district, and now you have to change your lines, and you know, your locomotives are all allocated to the coal and iron ore because it's more profitable than agriculture, and this is how we end up where we are at the moment. But this is something that we can recall. It's not that difficult, I believe. There was the only rain meter on rock, not doing a lot. This was what the maize looked like at the time when we got to just outside of Swaziland, very small. In that heat, it was already 27.5, like 7 o'clock in the morning. And you can see the farmers haven't planted them, you know, close together. They've stretched it because the farmers can't get more moisture to try. And so the farmers have done a lot of things to try and weather the storm here. If I can use that one. That was a nice piece of sunflower that also, you know, this farmer, although it was already late, and maybe I should have said that in the beginning there, for a rule of thumb that you can remember, if you take the N1 freeway to the east, and Mpumalanga Cape in Eastern Cape, we have to plant middle of October to the middle of November. This is the planting period. And then to the west of the N1, you have to plant between the middle of November to the middle of December. And then because of the frost, in the east we get frost a lot earlier, and in the west it is much colder that side. So we need to get it in between the middle of October and middle of November. So this guy was already late, but he was still preparing fields and hoped that it was going to receive some rain. That was the closest to Sonny Hawk. And here you can see, again, the rubble on the land. This guy is practicing conservation agriculture. The maize is not looking good. You know, the farm population is bad. You know, already he's looking at not the normal crops or something. Empty pieces of land near the silo there. You see the wind blowing. The maize is really getting lots of heat when it is just full. Again, you can see rubble on the land, conservation agriculture, but the maize, you know, here and there, it's not quite evenly planted like it was planted. Some of them didn't get up, some of them died already. Here you can see it's sending. There was some maize made, but they already, you can see it's taking a little bit, the leaves are good, but it's the leaves are sort of, you know, folded, yeah. So the maize plant tried to protect itself when it got close up so it don't lose it, you know, the moisture. Okay, here you can see again bad plant population. This was near Otisdal, and the maize was very small by that time. Empty fields, more empty fields. Now coming back to Plaasdorp, there was some, you can see the difference between the maize that got irrigated. You don't have water. This is what it looks like, and if you don't have water, this is what it looks like. So the irrigation is really a huge advantage for the country's food security. And I know that there's a lot of debate, you know, going on about water usage in the country, but and I've also read in the National Development Plan, there was some, you know, talks about in the Eastern Cape, specifically the Tumbulu River Valley, can't we put in more irrigation there? And I'm going to come to some of the strategies. This was a Venter Dorp. Know that, you know, the irrigation system was quite new, but there was no water, so the maize didn't proceed. I think this is like a Carltonville, some dry land maize. So, I'm saying this was the West, but this is the dualism that we have. It is not all bad. So we went east as well, just look at it, but before we went there, this is what the East State and the Northwest looks like. It's a dust storm. It almost looks like a desert. There's a nicer picture here from the air. This is the site of Henneman in the Free State, and you can see the dust here. It's all the maize fields that's not been planted that the wind was just blowing. So we had a lot of wind erosion this year as well. So then when I got back to the office, we went east, and this was the day when it was raining. So it was really a refreshing thing for me, because it was very sad to drive through all this western part of the country, northwest and northwest Free State. So, this is some soya beans, and I'm going to go quicker on the side. This was not so good, but at least there was something green on the field. This is my soya bean near Belmont. And what we saw was the maize that was planted earlier was not in a very good condition because they had all this heat stress in December. But the maize that was planted later actually looked very, very good, and it was about a 60% good maize, 40% average maize. There were also some nice pictures. So in fall, you can see this is the early planting. You can see the heat damage here. The maize plants are white. The leaves at this side is good maize that was planted later, and they received better rain, not all that heat. There was hail damage. You can see that the leaves are being damaged by hail. Not huge areas, but still there are farmers, and you know, we can talk later a little bit about the insurance. The insurance company doesn't like to insure the farmers on the west. They will insure these guys on the east because they get rain, but on the west they run with quotas because it is too risky for them. There you can see the white spots in the fields with all the heat damage in this particular area. So, you know, below average crop can be expected from that. There is another hail damage piece, pretty near. Very nice soya that we saw along there. It's beautiful soya that's in Drino. And I think this is that Kanheim is one of our big feedlots in Mpumalanga, and their maize are actually, they have a beautiful at that stage. So ma'am, to get back to the presentation that I showed you some of the pictures. We believe that, you know, there are two issues here for this drought. The one is, how are we going to overcome 2016? To bring in enough food so that there's enough food in the country, to look at the affordability issues, and how to get the cattle through the winter. I think this is the big issue for 2016. But for 2017, if those farmers are under stress now, can't plant next year, even if we get rain, we're going to have a similar season. So this is the two issues that we have to actually separate looking at the future. How do we deal with 2016? And this is, for us, infrastructure, you know, the trainers, all of the logistics around bringing in huge quantities into the country, getting the cattle through the winter. We are now making, you know, we're distributing all the feed that we've got
help the farms each other from this side to this side of the country, but somehow we worry that the feed must be finished. And you know, how are we going to feed the cattle then? And there's a lot of cattle in slaughter already. And then, as grain farmers, we worry about the crop finance for the new season. There's a lot of farmers that won't be able to access finance. If their farms come into the market, all the land prices will drop, and your security, because your land is your security to get a loan. And remember, an average grain farmer will go and borrow 8 million rand and split in the soil and then wait for the rain. That's the reality of it. So those guys who are feeding us, that's the risk that they take. They go and borrow 8 million rand, they put it in there and then they wait for the rain and hope it will come. So, and I will spend a lot of time on our new ear farmers, our black farmers. They don't own the land that they work. They can't get a loan, man. And this is our single biggest thing that we would like to leave with you today. Even if we get through this drought, those guys are never going to move forward if they can't get a loan of some kind. So, and they don't ask you for grants. Yes, grants help them, but they want to start, be sustainable, get some form of a soft loan or something with a guarantee at the back so that they can move forward, and I'm going to share some of the numbers with you. We will probably start the season with very low moisture levels, but we hope and we pray that in March we will receive a lot of rain as they predicted, and then the moisture levels will increase. So what the farmers did was, they put all the wheat seed. So we haven't planted a lot of wheat lately because it wasn't profitable. But if we get a lot of rain, the Free State guys all want to plant wheat. So it will be good for South Africa. We're importing 60% of our wheat at the moment. So there might be some good thing happening as well. But then we must receive a lot of rain so the moisture can be there for the next season. So what I'm trying to explain to you overall in terms of this drought is in the eastern side we produce about 40% of our maize, and there's an average to above average yield that awaits us. In the west, we produce about 60% of our maize, very late plantings, all of it was outside of the optimum window, all of it is going to be exposed to frost. And if you get frost damage, then obviously you're not yielding what you expect it to be. So the maize in the west is very young. It's currently on a severe stress. We actually had very little rain since we planted it. So, madam, but this was the most impressive stuff about this drought, the next piece of data. On the 15th of January, we made a survey amongst all our farms, and we discovered that we planted about 1.3 million hectares. So we intended to plant 2.5, but at that stage we have planted 1.3 million. Then on the 21st, the Crop Estimate Committee from the Department of Agriculture has done their work, and they came and they said, we planted 2 million hectares of maize. So we've planted 700,000 hectares of maize in 10 days. And I say it again, 700,000 hectares of maize in 10 days. That's 1.26 million seeds per minute that we've put down. This is the capacity that this country's got in our commercial sector to make sure there's enough food. And I think we must value that as a food security assets that we've got. So if nature gives you a window like we got and you haven't got that capacity, you might not be able to feed yourself. So what are we doing in terms of our strategy? Just to explain this graph to you, the green line at the top is what we call import parity. This is when we've got a shortage in the country. Then we price all our products in domestically according to what is the price bringing it into the country. The red line is when we've got surpluses, and the maize is normally in a surplus situation unless we've got a drought. So the cheapest way to feed our nation is to have a surplus of maize in this country. So what Grain South Africa is saying is we have to do everything we can to make sure there's surplus in the country. Then the people eating white maize meal, they can have it as cheap as possible. The people feeding the chickens, as cheap as possible. The cattle, is, you know, the dairy cows, as cheap as possible, so that we have low food prices in the country. And you would have seen here in the earlier 2013, we had low maize prices in the country, low food prices, low inflation. And then we had a shortage. There was a little bit of a drought in Northwest, and there was a concern in the market, and the price went up. This black is the South African price. So it went, yes, see, but this is a pretty bad color now that I think about it, the purple and the black. Sorry for that, Madam Chair. But so we went up to import parity. Now, Madam Chair, the thing is, the gap between having a shortage and having a surplus is 75% in food prices.
So we can't afford it as a country to have a shortage of maize. Now obviously we can't control the rain, but there's a few other things that we can do, and this is the important food security strategy that we follow. How do we keep the farmers profitable at export parity so that we can have the cheapest way to feed this nation? And now the bad news is we went up here when we started talking about the drought. You can see February when we all got back from leave and we see we didn't plant. The window in our past, the price went up from about 2,100 rand to 3,100 rand like overnight. Now 1,000 rand on 2,100 rand is a 50% increase. So can you imagine if we ask all the maize meal eaters in this country to pay 50% more? But that wasn't the end of it. So as we progressed and we saw that the farmers didn't plant and the crop is actually not going to be there, the price went actually way above what it's costing us to import it. And Wandile will explain to you a little bit later about why is it gone way above the green, because there's not a lot of white maize available in the world. It is basically the southern point of Africa that is eating white maize, and Mexico and Venezuela, they do this to our business, they also consume a little bit of white maize. The rest of the world's not eating pop. It's just us. But this is a speciality for us, and this is some problem that we can talk about later. The second point I want to make in terms of our food security strategy, ma'am, is we need to migrate about 1 million tons of production from Mpumalanga to the Eastern Cape by 2020. And the reason is because of the coal mine activities in Mpumalanga. They're buying up all agricultural land. Let me just get the graph up. So these guys are close to Gauteng, which is the biggest consuming area. It's nice for transport, cheap transport. This is good for rain. You can see this year, it's a dry year, but they still got enough rain to have a crop that's very sustainable and stable when it comes to their production. But the coal mines are buying up all the agriculture and they got the money. So now we're losing all the agriculture and we're losing production on that side. And we can't move that production to Northwest because it's too dry. We know the risk of climate change is more in the west of the country. So what we thought was, we just can move it here because there's a lot of fallow land in the Eastern Cape, and the Honourable Member will confirm that. But you will all know, it is all communal land, and communal farmers don't get a loan. So if we want to succeed, and I'm going back to that graph, if we're not going to migrate that production from Mpumalanga to the Eastern Cape successfully, we're going to have a shortage in the country and all our farmers will always be on this top line and we'll pay 75% more for our product. So we need to be successful to migrate that, because I don't think agriculture is going to win fight against the mines. Unless you can tell me differently, I would love to hear that. But so what we're saying is, madam, we need to move on. I'm on a sore point here somewhere. Not. Okay. So what we've done as an organization at Grain SA, we've opened three offices in the Eastern Cape. We've got one in Kokstad that is serving here all these guys around the mountain at Matatiel, good agriculture soils, good trains. We've got one in Mthatha, and we've got one here in Maclear. And we've got over 2,000 black farmers that's already gone through training courses and that's ready to expand their businesses, but they can't get a loan. And I know I'm going to hammer on this thing, but this is the critical thing for me to convey this morning. So yes, we can do a little bit in KZN as well, and I'm going to tell you about some of the projects that we can. But this is a huge challenge for us to make sure the country's got surplus maize, that we got the cheapest prices for food and for the feed. Madam, this is our farmer development program, and I'm going to spend a bit of time on this to show you what is Great South Africa doing through our farmer development program. We're going to start here. We've got about 5,000 subsistence farmers. We know there's plenty of those. And our goal with subsistence farmers is not to make them a commercial farmer, but to get them to a commercial yield. It doesn't matter whether he's got 1 hectare or 5 hectares, as long as he can get a commercial yield. This is our aim with those guys. So we've got training courses for them, study groups, farmers days, trial plots. And we've got lots of information on them, what the GPS coordinate of their farm, what their soil samples like, what was their yield last year, and all of those sort of things. We've got that on a database. And what we've done last year, we started off with a project. We said we wanted to have 1,000 farmers on 1,000 hectares, 1 hectare each. They had to pay in 1,500 rand. Now, Madam Chair, if you are a 1 hectare farmer, 1,500 rand is a lot of money. And they had 155 farmers paid it into our account. We gave them seed. They also had to give us a soil sample. So we gave them seed, we gave them fertilizer, we gave them a 20-liter Natex sprayer that they put on their back so they can do it by hand. They got a hand planter, it's like a garden fork with a lever, and you can just pull it, and then there's one maize still going into the ground. And the wonderful thing was last year was not a very good year agriculture-wise, but we got 4.5 tons a hectare throughout that program. And they normally use 1 ton to feed the families. So can you imagine if you add 3.5 tons at this base price, what it does to their income as a household? So the program was very successful last year, and we went to Treasury, to the Job Fund, and we said, can't we double this thing? And we got some money from Treasury, and we got more of our agriculture partners in, and we have planted, I think the 1,800 was our aim this year. We got to 1,500 because some of the farmers couldn't plant because it was too dry. And sometimes it's a challenge to explain to people in Treasury, you know, why didn't you plant? You know, they are working by the book that says, you promised us you will plant 2,000 hectares, you only plant 1,800 hectares. Anyway, so we don't expect the same good results this year because of the drought, but I think those farmers who have planted dry beans or maize, and especially in our Eastern KZN area, they might come back and obtain very close to commercial yields. And the program is supposed to then double up in the next 2 years. So we're aiming to be at almost 4,000 farmers in the next 2 years in this project. So this is what we're trying to take the subsistence farmers to get to a commercial yield. But then, Madam Chair, we've got 1,100 farmers looking from 10 hectares upwards to 250 tons. And we want to help them try to become commercial farmers. But they work in state land and they work in communal land. They don't have title deeds. They can't get a loan. And this is my calling. So let me not repeat it. You know, there's about 140 farmers that we've got. They've got a business plan for their farm. That we serve them one-on-one. We help them to make sure that they can become commercial farmers. Some of them have received the recapitalization from a rural development land reform. I was going to show you about that. And then we've got about 123 farmers, which we call the members of our 250-ton club. They produce more than 250 tons in any particular year. So they, as far as we're concerned, is totally commercial. Why we use the 250? You know, this is the people on the ground that says, you know, this is a big enough farmer that can get a loan and that can move on with his business. So this is the dualism in our black farmers, grain farmers in the country. They've gone through good training. They're well organized. You know, if I go to the internet today, I can see there was a meeting in Bizana yesterday. These were the guys who attended. There's the ID number, there's their cell phone number, there's their farm number. This is the process that they've attended. What was on the agenda discussed? You know, all of those things. We've got a very good system monitoring that to tell what's going on. So just in short, we've got offices, Nelspruit and Lichtenburg, Taung, Loosburg, Dundee, and then in Leybrand in the Free State, and down here in the Western Cape in Paul for the wheat farmers, and then the three that I mentioned in the Eastern Cape. So in this program, just over 6,000 farmers, the hectares are not big enough yet. There's about 138 study groups. We plant trial plots to just show them what is best practice, how do you do this, you know, this is now time for spraying, this is how you do it, this is the chemicals you use. If you find this problem in the maize, this is what you have to look for. We have farmers' days, and I can have, you know, we've got the names and the ID numbers of all those people, cell phone numbers of all those people attending the farmers' days. And then we've also trained some farm workers, 335 farm workers. So we've got 6 mobile units. It's like a bucky or a fencer trailer, and it's got like a workshop on it, like a welder and a grinder and some paint, spray paint stuff. So we go into a community, you bring all your broken plows and ox wagons and whatever the case be, and then we teach you how to weld, how to grind in a safe environment, and they pick their own stuff. So by the end of the week, they've learned some skill, and then they fix some of their own stuff, and we do that all the time. We've got 6 of those units doing that in the deep rural areas. As I said, 140 advanced farmers, we've presented 137 different courses. It's also accredited with the CITAS. It is, you know, basic planting of maize, you know, how to deal with the chemicals, safe handling of chemicals, you know, up to get to the point where it's like, you know, trading on the JSE in hedging positions and management ethics, all those sort of things are part of those courses. 1,775 people attended. We've got a magazine in seven languages that is very basic, very elementary. When it's planting time, we write articles about how to plant. When it's harvesting time, you explain to them what to look for, you know, all these sort of phases. So the magazine goes to about 240,000 people. Then we also have a schools program for the grade 9 kids. This is just before they make their final decisions about their subject matters going into matric. And we tell them about agriculture. You know, we've got DVDs that they show to these kids. It's agriculture 101. You know, how do you farm? You know, what is the career in agriculture? Not just farming, but research and traders and, you know, all these sort of careers in agriculture. And where does your hamburger and your t-shirt come from? You know, just explain to them that, you know, you have to slaughter a cow and or whatever, you know, and the meat needs to be processed, and there's a tomato and, you know, some wheat for the bun and all of those little things in the butter. Just to explain to them, it's not just pick and pay stuff. It's the farmers. Okay, we visited about 870 schools. We've covered about 126,000 kids. This is some, you know, stuff that we do as an organization. The cost of this development program is about 22 million rand a year to keep all of this going. But this is our contribution that we do with our partners to make sure, you know, we've got partners like the Maize Trust and the Winter Cereal Trust. And some of you would remember the Winter Cereal Trust is asking, like, you know, statutory levy and to make contributions to make all of this happen. The other industries like oil seeds and sorghum is a bit smaller, but the maize and the wheat is the big contributors here. Now, Chair, then we've got partnerships with governments on the rural development land reform. And this is just numbers that are programs that we've done for them since 2012 to recap farmers. Guys, and this is very successful in what we're doing. We haven't got a big number of farms. You will see here on the side, it's about 31 in total. But the thing is, when you recapitalize farming, you give them a tractor that is suitable for his piece of land. You don't give him a, you know, like a big tractor of 4 million rand if you only got 50 hectares. You measure it off. Sometimes we buy a second-hand planter because that is suitable for this piece of land or whatever case may be. But those farmers, most of them, the moment they get recapitalized and they get a good crop, they don't buy their own farm the next season. And then they've got security and then they can move forward. So the recapitalization program that we've done, and I mean, we can bring all these farmers, they really have done well. And some of them has moved on big time in terms of commercial. I think the one guy harvested 1,500 tons of sunflower alone last year. Outside of his maize, I can't remember what his maize was, Mr. Matlane there in the Lukat area. So he also bought some additional farms. He's really moving forward. This year, we got recapitalization 20 million rand for 9 farmers in the Free State. And then there's the 1 hectare project that we set in the communal areas, only communal areas, there's 1 hectare farms. So we aim this year to get to 1,600, I think we're about 1,540 or something like that. So here you can see the farmer contributed 1,500, this year they've contributed 1,700, and that was the contribution from the other role players to make it happen, and this guy should get a commercial yield. So that is really working well for us. So man, see, moving forward, we said in terms of our food security, we also need to partner with government. We can't do it alone. We're too small. We don't have the numbers and the volumes to really take this forward. And therefore, we need to establish new partnerships to take this forward. And then, obviously, we want to keep farmers profitable at export parity, because this is the lowest price farmers can get to make sure that the people can get you food. But now you have to make him sustainable at that level. So we need to spend more money on research. And we can talk about, you know, where's the research for the drought and where's the research for the heat? Because we've also discovered a lot of the maize, when you irrigate them, they wet at the grassroots level, but the heat is so much that the plant doesn't pollinate. It's getting too much heat. Now, when you talk to Monsanto and all these people that does all the research on the drought-tolerant varieties, they said heat and drought the same thing. But we've discovered in the past 3 years that it's not the same thing. We're going to have to look for varieties that is heat tolerant as well, that can, you know, can still pollinate while it is so wild, it is so hot. You know, we can run into an office or a house and put on an air conditioner, but the plants out there, they just struggle, and it's getting really hot in those big areas. So we need to improve our research, and then we must make sure there's export markets. And I know I will get the attention of Ms. Alexander here, because this is one of her passions. And I mean, the minister did very well
I think it even started with Minister Tina's time when she went to China and got us a deal that we can even export to China. So we can only do it when we've got surpluses, because then our prices are low, then the world will buy it. Because at the moment it is so high, nobody will buy it. So we need to improve our research, and we need to have export markets so that the product can get out to the farmers to plant again. And I'm getting just on the crop estimates, I think the department is doing an excellent job in this area. So what we've asked them to do is, in the months since we started planting, up to about May, when the maize is, you know, sort of ready to, what is physiological? Is that the word? Physiological, right now, it starts to dry down now. So we said they can be 8% out in the beginning, and then we ask them to be about 5% out at the end, so that the market can trust them and know where the crop estimate is going to be. So last year, it's not this year, last year they started off, and you can look at, you know, they really done well in terms of white maize, in terms of the yellow maize, in terms of total maize. They were like 0.5% out of the end. This is a lot better than Americans can do. So we use satellite technology. We digitize all the pieces of land. We fly over it with a very low flying aircraft, and the farmers, there's a farmer sitting in the airplane, and he picks on the laptop, and he says, this is maize, this is beans, this is sunflower, and then all those dots, you know, the software just accumulates it and says, like, all these hectares are so much for sunflower, so much for this, and it's very accurate, man. And we do the country a big favor by having a system like this, and you can see it was very accurate, and I think this is really exceptionally well. This year is a bit of a challenge, because we planted late, and they started with an estimate earlier. You will see, we always started in February. Now this year we started in January, because we were worried and we were concerned, are we having enough or not? And I think this might be the year where they might be a little bit tough, because we're not sure how it's going to go forward. But this is really the best year that we had the previous year, and I think the system is working well, and the department needs a big compliment for doing it so well. So what are our challenges? The crop finance for our new farmers. And I made a calculation, and if we can get from government somehow R1 billion of guarantees, not cash, guarantees, that will enable the banks and the agribusinesses to borrow or to lend money onto these farmers without land being the security, because then they have this guarantee at the back as the security. Then the money can flow, then these farmers can grow. So it's not necessarily that it's going to cost the government anything. If there's a default, then obviously they're going to claim against this fund. But I think at the end, this is a sort of almost like a cash-free guarantee that the government can help the black farmers in this country to grow maize and to grow whatever they would like in terms of the grains. The second thing I've put down here is we have seen a decrease in the money allocated to research. And as I said, you know, we're probably going to have to look at more drought-tolerant and more heat-tolerant research to be done, given the climate change and the severity thereof. And we need to keep on focusing on yields. It's interesting, there was a huge South African delegation going to Australia the other day to a wheat, international wheat conference. And when we came back, I asked the scientists, now, what was the biggest, you know, the single biggest thing that we are different than other countries? They said, they are focusing so much on yield, and we are focusing so much on quality, that we have lost the line in the world. You know, they're way ahead of us. We have to adapt and change, and I think if we look at our wheat industry, and Wandile will show you some of the graphs here, our wheat industry is just going down, and every year we're importing more and more, so we need to do something about the wheat yields and even the maize. Climate change, I think somehow we need to say, as agriculture, how are we going to deal with it? Where's the impact? Where's our speciality unit, you know, looking at climate change and the impact there? The CA stands for Conservation Agriculture, to make sure the farmers are using the best practices. The input royalty system is something new that you will also get on your table probably towards the end of the year. The wheat, the soyas and the canolas, you can keep the seed back and replant it next and you will get more or less the same crop yield. The maize in this country, you can't replant and get the same yield back. They call it hybrids. But now what the farmers are doing is they take the seed, wheat and canola and soyas, and they keep it back. They allow two under the act, the plant improvement act. But then the people who develop the technology, they don't get any refund for it, because you don't buy the seed again. You keep the seed for 3 or 4 years and then you might buy it. So these guys are saying to us, if you give us a royalty when the farmer delivers it at the silo, you pay a statutory levy, and we can get that to reinvest. We can bring the best technology to South Africa because then we know we're going to get our money back. So there's improvement in soya. As I said, about 20% improvements in yields. We can't get it in the country because the owners of the technology say, you know, we're not getting our money back because we sell it once and then you keep the seed and then we can't recover our inputs. This is unfortunately a sore point on a diesel rebate. You will know farmers are qualified for diesel rebates. They make application to SARS. And the sad thing is, ma'am, there's an office in Northwest that is not functioning. And we made a survey. It was 86 farmers that had claimed 8.8 million rands worth of diesel rebates, and it is not being dealt with by the SARS office because of, you know, whatever their problem is. And it's not that there's a problem with the rebate claims. It is just capacity not doing it. So these are the farmers that have the biggest effect in the country, and yet they're financing SARS. And I think this is really something that we need to pay attention to. And it is not throughout the country. It's very localized. I think they just need to step up and send somebody who can do the job. And we as farmers are not complaining. If we've done something wrong, that's fine. Then you fix it. You know. But if you have submitted everything and they're not talking to you and they're not paying out, and you wait 12 months for your diesel rebate, I don't think that's fair, especially not for those guys. And then I also explained to Ms. Alexander this morning about the wheat tariff. You know, it's an automatic thing. It triggered the import duty on wheat. It triggered in December, early in December, and it hasn't gone through the whole government structures to get approval. I think there's, you know, difficult delays in difficult times. I'm getting through. I'm also done, Madam Chair. I'm continuing on the challenges. I spoke a little bit about the insurance. So international companies, that the underwriters, and a lot of them, we only got three companies that is insuring crop in South Africa, and about only 16% of our hectares get insured. Very expensive. And then secondly, sometimes even if you're prepared to pay, they said, we don't go in your area. It's too risky. And somehow, you know, if you're a new farmer, and you take all your savings, and you started planting your maize, and you get a drop like this, you're never going to get up again. And somehow we believe there could be some system, and we've seen some in the U.S., some in Canada, where government is assisting farmers with something to make sure that they can recover if there's a disaster like this. Then the land reform has not progressed as, in terms of the speed. Madam Chair, I think, yeah, I don't know what is the delay at the moment. I mean, since last year we had very little progress in the land reform process, and I think we would love to put our proposals on the table and to work with you to make sure that those farmers are sustainable, because we know that some of the land reform projects have not been sustainable and moving forward. But we've got good farmers that's been trained. They want to be farmers. They don't live in the cities and farm over the weekend. They stay there, you know, with a cattle and during the winter and during the summer times when it's hot and cold and so forth. Then we've received a lot of assistance from Science and Technology and from Rural Development and from DTI. And I don't know what is the problem necessarily. I believe some of the DAF officials always say to me that they don't have the money. The money gets allocated to the other departments. But somehow we haven't got a partnership with our Department of Agriculture when it comes to financial assistance. We talk a lot on imports and, you know, the sanitary and phytosanitary issues there. We've got very good cooperation. The crop estimate, as I said, is doing well. But I'm not sure where is the farm development side. Is it all with rural development? You know, because there we've got cooperation, but this might be an area where we can cooperate a little bit better for the future. And then we ask all these 10 offices of ours, you know, what is happening at grassroots level? Is the assistance coming through to the farmers? And this was the response I received from them. In the Western Cape, I think some farmers received some money for their farm workers to keep them, they got a 70% of the wage subsidy from government. Mpumalanga, they proposed in Nelspruit area, Bombela, 18 municipalities, each got 10 farms. They got some feed and gojo tank per farm. In Northwest, there was some feed given in the households in the communal areas. In Tata, there was nothing specifically reported. Matatiel, the guy said very little has been done. And in Gautavi, they said there's some feed in some government store, but it hasn't reached the farmers yet. So I think there have been some things happening, but the farmers are not experienced. And I'm talking black farmers here. I'm not talking commercial farmers. We are not aware of any commercial farmers that can help, but I think somehow the assistance is not getting through. And Madam Chair, if you look at that first graph about how severe is this drought, you know, you can't fix it with 100 and 200 million rand. It is going to ask a little bit more of us to maintain our food security capacity. In the Free State, we made 14 calls to farmers, and two of them, one in Senekal and one in Paul Roux, responded positively. In KZN, we weren't sure about something, and as I said, in the commercial side, we haven't heard from government on that. But I think there has been a lot of talks between organized agriculture. I want to conclude with this last graph, and now I'm just back to the big strategic thing. And what I've got on the horizontal axis is, you know, whether you control your agriculture sector or whether you allow it to go free. We have experience in the country of both. We had in the earlier 1980s and 90s, we had the maize boards and all of those things, so we government controlled it, and now we've experienced 20 years of free market. On the other axis, I've got whether we're competitive in the world or not competitive. And if we look at this combination, you know, we want to be in the top right-hand corner. We call it the cornucopia, the maize heaven. And we believe we need to allow the market to go free, and we need to be competitive in the world. If we're competitive, we will have surpluses. If we've got surpluses, there's enough food in the country, and the prices are the lowest that we can get it. But if we bring everything back, and we control everything like we did in the past, and we're not competitive in the world, we might end up for the IMF to come and bail us out, or food agencies to come, because we can't feed our nation ourselves. But again, I think this is the big strategic picture that I would like to leave with you. When we deal with this drought for 2016, it is dealing with the infrastructure, dealing to make sure that there's enough food in the country, and dealing with the problems about affordability, because it's going to be very expensive when it is going to show to you the prices and those sort of things. But going forward, we need to produce more, because we want surpluses. And it is not necessarily good for the farmers to have surpluses, because the prices will be low. But that is the best for the nation. And we can live with it, because we need to be profitable at those low prices. But that will be the best to provide stability to the country, because if there's instability, and we've seen what the students are doing if there's instability, we know about 27, when the world was having high food prices, there were lots of food riots, especially in the northern African parts. We remember the Arab Spring, we call it the Arab Spring. Somebody asked me, are we now heading for a rainbow spring here down in South Africa? But we can overcome this drought together, and then we're going to take the industry forward, making sure there's enough food. And the farmers are very positive that we can do that, and we can contribute helping us as a country to get there. So, Madam Chair, this is the presentation about the drought. What Mr. Lobo has got is what are the prices doing, how is it, affecting the food prices, and so on. So I don't know whether you want to first deal with questions and then the presentation. It's up to you. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much, CEO. Let's allow your colleagues to present so that members will then ask questions later. Over to you, sir.
Good morning, and thank you so much. Mr. Villiers has sort of painted briefly a picture to you about what are some of the challenges that are in the sector. So like you said, I sort of really look at it on the supply side on what's really happening. I'm sure a number of you have picked up on social media or in the media on how much is needed to be imported, and also those sort of things on what the household food security is looking like. But the first thing to really bring on is to say that this is not just a problem for South Africa.
This is the one you did last night to update everything. So we will send it to you. Sorry, we didn't want to send you old data.
We apologize for that. In this slide, I said we just want to bring on the relevance of South Africa, that we're not just important, and also the current drought is not just affecting South Africa only. Because if you look at the SADC region, maize production, which is what is mostly consumed, is around about 29 million tons on average. And about 42% of that is really produced in South Africa. So in a way, if you have a problem with the supplies in South Africa, you have a problem in the entire region. And we say that because if you look at the import side of the region, around about 70% or so of the maize that they import, it comes from South Africa. And another thing that is also worth noting is the fact that we're not just being affected by the drought this year. In a crop that we harvested in 2015, if you take the whole basket of the summer crops, it was already down by around about 27%. You're looking at your maize, you're looking at the soybeans, the sunflowers, and all of that. And maize, which is a staple food, was down by 30%. So there was already a reaction in the market. And I think what was all much more negative is the fact that the farmers had planted the usual hectares, around about 4 million hectares of planted on summer crops. And there were huge financial losses. So guys coming on in this season, they were already under stress from the previous season. And in this year, like Mr. de Villiers has said, that the CEC is forecasting that, you know, the crop might have to reduce further by 25%, meaning from the 9.9 million tons that we had harvested last year to now 7.4 million tons. And again, it's still a preliminary estimate. We might see downward revision if you're looking at the timing of the planting and also the other factors that are involved in production. And just to put this all in perspective, if you look at that graph, you will see how some of the major maize-producing countries in the region are looking like. If you look at South Africa, the light brownish line is the crop that we're actually estimating for this year for all of these countries. And in South Africa, you will see where we're actually sitting, coming from 4.3 million tons, that was the situation in 2014. And some of the other countries which are our neighbors are the ones that will be pretty much in a difficult situation. Take, for example, countries like Zimbabwe. The annual consumption of maize is around about 2.7 million tons of maize that is consumed. And if you look at the production, it's roughly below 500,000 tons. So that tells you that for those guys to keep themselves going from April 1st of May 2016 to April 2017, they will need roughly between 1.1 to close to 2 million tons of maize that is needed. So the whole region is not looking well. Tanzania is not a big exporter of maize and is also fairly not affected much comparing to the previous years because it can get something which is roughly below 6 million tons. But the whole region is pretty much not looking well. And if you look then for South Africa, just in a long bit of a time frame, to see how have we actually been progressing over the years just on the maize side. You see that over the years we have progressed quite well. We're sitting comfortable having surplus years and having good stocks. And this would be, of course, the lowest crop coming on for that season. But what makes this year of particular difference than the other years is that our population has grown. We have now estimated for 54 million people that are in South Africa. And also the situation in the region has changed as in the main needs that is needed in there. So all of that is putting pressure, which is why now the food security issue is a bit of a pretty much more important this year comparing in the other years. In the other years, we had comfortable stocks. The maize that was required to be consumed in South Africa was not 10.5 million tons, which is pretty much the situation in these years. Also, the other countries in the region were much more reliant, as we showed on the previous slide, on what the figure is currently looking like. And crops that are closer to our tables, for example, in the white maize, you will see that on white maize, if what the CDC forecasts that will actually be the crop, if it's the Crop National Estimate Committee, if what they say that is going to be the crop, we do get that crop, it will still be the lowest since 1994. But then the other thing to remember is that much of our white maize is planted in the western side of the country. And that's where planting was done outside of the planting window, which means now yields might even be lower than what was already expected from our tour when we went around and checking what the situation is here. So, and I think this is pretty much what is of critical importance. And also, on a yellow maize is pretty much better than the white maize side. It might be the lowest crop if we get what is expected since 2006 and 7. And then the situation is a bit much better because if you look at the global world, it's pretty much easier to get yellow maize than if the situation on the white maize. So the picture in there, it looks pretty much different. But then in all of this, what we have done in those lines in there is just to index up some of the major summer crops that we will be producing, your groundnuts, your soybeans, maize, and sunflowers, see how have we actually been doing over the years. And you see in this block of crops, farmers have actually been doing fairly well. In some of the areas that are planted in there, have actually shrinked from what was planted in 2004. So But if you look on the yield side, we were sitting comfortably, everything was going well. The only crop that hasn't been doing well in that block has been peanuts. I think South Africa, to some extent, don't like peanuts, and the input costs are also high. So that's a different story in there. But generally, everything, the picture is looking well. It's only this year which we're expecting those decreases that you see on the brackets in there, that 25%, further decrease on maize, 6% on sunflowers. But now we're putting up on sunflowers, but the area that is planted is actually increased. But now the production is expected to be lower because of the yields and all of that stuff. And then the soybeans, with the crop that has actually done well over the years, you can see the growth in that line graph, that the soybeans have actually done well over the years. And what has been a major driver of that is that the South African economy has grown, middle class has sort of expanded, people are getting better incomes, and then they're starting to demand more of the meat stuff and the high-protein food. And so that drove on a demand from the feeding industry, which in turn was driven by this consumption, which has come on for meat and all of those things. So we've done well in there, and there has been some investments from the private sector as well as the department side, like the DTI, to put up some crunchy plants, which will actually be the ones which were buying a lot of our sunflower soybeans and driving up that demand. So it has been a good movement in there. And we see that also on the maize side. If you see from 2013-14 there, yellow maize started to actually, the maize that was going on to the feed industry, it started now to be higher than what is actually consumed on the human side. And this is in a way good, because now it means that South Africans are getting more high protein food, and our livestock side is actually expanding and on all of that. So those are some of the changing dynamics in the consumption we have actually seen. But progressing and seeing how production has actually been and what the reaction has been on the prices, what has been interesting is that you would assume, or even from basic economics, that when prices go up, people buy less of the other things. But on the maize, it's not that case. I mean, people have to eat no matter the prices. And in this year, for example, in February, end of February here, 2015, that's where we started detecting that, okay, we're going to have a problem. The crop was on pollination, and the prices already reacted, and they increased by 50% or so from the previous year. But consumption grew, continued to be stronger in there, because the animals had to be fed, and then the crop needed to be actually in the market. And we see this also happening in white maize side. Prices have been higher since February 2015, coming on today, over 4,000 tons a ton. But we continue to see, consumption actually getting in there. So this shows that, you know, we need to have maize in the market, because people have to consume no matter the day. And I think this is one of the other things that is pretty much important to you. If you read these bar graphs from this side, on the side, and then you can read line graphs on this side, what we have here is just a glimpse of the supply and demand of maize in South Africa. This line graph, this one, the brownish one on top there, it shows you the consumption level on what our market or our appetite a year is actually sitting at. And here in this other line, we have here the crop that we expected to actually be produced in South Africa. So that means we need to fill up that gap between those lines. And that green line is the imports that we estimate now, that if we are able to get the production of 7.4 million tons of maize, then we will have to import roughly 3.8 million tons of maize that we need to actually come in South Africa to keep us comfortable from 1st of May this year, 2016, up until 30th of April, 2017. If that's the case, then that would be the case. But in all of that, we will continue to see some of the exports going on to the SADC countries, Botswana, your Lesotho, your Swaziland, Namibia, some of the countries that we continue to export. And we estimate that we'll have to send out to those countries roughly around about 680,000 tons that will go out to those countries. But now the problem is, the challenge within the supply side, is going back to that first graph that we showed, that the other countries like Zimbabwe and all of those countries are also facing on a bit of a challenge in there. So if they happen then to demand more, which is pretty much the case as we're looking at the numbers, then there's a high possibility that these exports might be higher than what we estimated here. So if you start to export a bit higher than that, then you need to bring in a bit higher than that, because now production is what we have just explained. So those are some of the pressure within the supply side, and then you start to see that also transpiring in the pricing side as you go forward. So I think those are some of the key major important things. And what you have here in the other line here is basically the stocks. You know about a million and a half of carryover stocks going on in the other market in there. So this is what we actually estimated that will actually be available to keep the country going on to the other year for 2017. But putting this all just in numbers to sort of see on how much when you break down 13.8 on how much is going to be white maize that is going to be needed. We estimate that keeping confident that we get the 7.4 total white maize, total maize production, we have to bring in at least about 1.1 million tons of white maize to keep us comfortable up until we get to 2017. And this is where then is the challenge, as Mr. Julius has said, that outside of Africa, actually to be specific, white maize is largely produced in Mexico. The United States do have a bit of a white maize production of roughly 3.5 million tons a year, and they consume roughly 2 million tons, and the rest they export it to the other Latin American countries. And even the 2 million tons that they consume is for the Latino population within them to do tortillas and all of these other sorts of things. And in the yellow maize, we estimate that imports will have to be around about 2.7 million tons. And that won't be a challenge to actually source. As you saw now, that South Americans are increasingly exporting a large part of their maize to South Africa. And I mean, they're having good supplies, and they're still expecting some large crop to actually be producing this year. So it won't be much of a problem to actually get on in a yellow maize. And you'll see the other graphs that we have to present on what the price difference is actually in between the white maize and the yellow maize. White maize being sort of reflecting the scarcity of that in the global market. And in total, this is the number that we already painted in those bar graphs to you on how much we actually think that we actually have to be brought on in a country. That's the minimum, of course. And assuming that we do get that 7.4, that the CC forecast said, and we don't export a lot of maize, which is pretty much, we yet to see on how that's actually going to be. But I mean, I think also it's best to appreciate that over the years, South Africa has been doing great. It's only just this year and some few previous years which we have had a challenge. Because if you look at the graph, all of those years we have had the surpluses, those are our exports that you see there in the light brown color there on the maize. And the only years where we actually been net exporters is the one that we have boxed in these bar graphs. And in there, where we were net importers, the situation was not as bleak because the imports that needed to be brought in, they were largely yellow maize. So that's why you didn't see such much of the concern that you're actually seeing now. And we're way lower than what we actually need to bring in the year. And this year, which is what we said, that white maize is also being part of the challenge. But I think it's also, like Mr. Julius has said, that the Department of Agriculture have assisted a lot in opening up many markets for the grain industry. So in those years coming up until actually 2014, we have been assisted in opening markets in the Far East, your likes of Japan, Taiwan, China, and some countries in Europe, which we export largely our maize to. And we have been doing great there. But now what I wanted to show in this line is that we estimate that all of our maize, because of this drought, is no longer going to be going. You see 100% of it, as you see in this line graph, is actually going to be going on to the SADC countries. While in other years, for example, if you look in 2013, below 40% of our maize went to the SADC countries, but large part of it went on to the global market. But if you look at it in volume terms, of course, the volume was pretty much the same, but it's just that we had more surpluses which we were able to put on in the global market. And I think this is good not only for the farmers, also for the economy. Because if you look, for example, in 2014, when we exported 2 million tons of maize, that earned South African export revenue, just the maize alone, 6.5 million rand. Just in the maize alone. So you can imagine if we start now to have more surpluses for the other costs and how much value that would actually add to our economic life. So I think it is really important that we produce surpluses we're putting out there. And we're putting out that maize at pretty lower prices of around about below 2,000 rand actually a ton. And you're able to add more value in there. So I think these are some of the important things. And it just paints the picture of agriculture. If one commodity can do them export revenue alone, imagine if you were having these surpluses in the whole summer crop. And now, putting this also again, taking back to the region to see how is the SADC actually sitting. These are our members, are the member countries in the SADC, and South Africa is right there. And what we're trying to show here is the proportion of imports in their annual consumption of maize. Botswana will have to import more than 80% of what they consume, which means they're heavily dependent on outside supplies for large whole of their consumption today. And, Zimbabwe, we have to import more than 60% of what they consume from outside. Of course, in all of these countries, assuming that what is estimated that is production would materialize. But, of course, there's still a lot of uncertainty. We're still at the early stages. We still have 4 months to actually go to see if we get good rains in February for the crop in pollination to actually go on in there. But again, I mean, it's important to know that these are just in proportions, but if you look in the volume terms, it's a different picture. Because South Africa would be the one that will need more volume. Botswana is a country of about 1 million people in the population, so you see, it will need more, far less than what South Africa needs. Zimbabwe, 18 million people in Zimbabwe, so they will need far less than what South Africa will need in income, which is about 54 million people. So in proportion, in volume terms, it's a bit of a different picture. But the other thing, which maybe some people, you might have heard people saying, you say, okay, South Africa is having a drought, but there's a lot of maize in the world, we shouldn't worry. We should get worried, even if there are large supplies in the world, like I said. Because 95 to 98% of that maize which is available in there is yellow maize. And we're not about to eat yellow crop. We need to eat the traditional white maize, the white crop that we use on. So I think, I mean, we might be comfortable in a global space, but we're looking on the domestic side. I think it's important. But for sure, in the world, since that year, which was a drought, 2012-13, things have recovered. It's a pretty much looking better situation, which is what we were saying, that, you know, it becomes easier for the guys on yellow maize to source the maize, not speaking of price of it, but to get the supplies from South America and all of these countries to bring it in their country. And white maize is a different picture. But what the response of all of this in the prices to say how is actually things been? Because you might have heard people saying that, okay, if in the world there's yellow maize, then people can, you know, sit on and eat crackers and eat rice, and we shouldn't really be reliant on the crop. But looking at the pricing alone, I mean, back is still, maize has increased, if you look at it, by roughly 150% if you look on in a raw commodity than the previous year. But it's still the cheapest you can find if you're looking on in the tables. In that graph, we're trying to show there in a green line, that is the price of rice per ton in rand terms. And in here, we have the white maize, which is expensive at above, you can read these lines, 1, 2, 3, you can read them this side on the rand term. This light brownish one, you can read in that side, it's a U.S. maize and a U.S. time sign. But what we're trying to see firstly is that, you know, white maize above 5,000 a ton, but still, it is 500 rand less than what the rice is to actually buy it. And so rice is pretty much quite expensive. You can't say people will stop eating, you know, pot and then go eat rice and stuff like that, because it's still really sitting on at an expensive level. And yellow maize, you know, has increased from previous years. If you see it in a year ago, we were sitting on at that level, and these have been increases. So it just shows you the picture there that it is looking on in a different way. And internationally, like I said, there's a lot of maize prices have gone down. If you look at this line graph, you're reading in a U.S. dollar term, they've gone down by roughly 8% from a year ago. I mean, you can't say now, okay, maize prices are 8% lower in the global market, and in South Africa are down, so we can as well buy from way cheap to bring it in the country. But there is a different risk, because everything that you're buying outside, it's dollar denominated. And the rand, as we're looking at it today, and our forecast, when we look forward in the next 3 quarters or so, we're not really seeing a promising picture. So commodities can be cheaper in the world, but to bring it down in the country, it's a different story. And I mean, we see that from the parity prices that Mr. De Villiers has shown, and also from what we are showing in this picture in there. Because to get that green line, just for purposes, to get that green line in there, you're basically looking on, that's the price that you pay when you're buying commodity outright. You're basically looking at their price in dollar terms. You're basically looking at insurance costs, and the shipping costs, and the load costs, and all of that. And all of that is in US dollar terms, and then you throw it on in a rent term, then you get a bit of a high price in there. And this is a price when our farmers, when we have services, this is where we have to sell our maize to the world. And this is a price that is traded at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So you see that the idea within grain and say, like this video has said, is to keep a comfortable, you know, trading between these two lines, because if you're trading between these two lines, it basically means that if you have more maize that is available and the farmers are making loss, the world outside sees your maize as pretty much more cheaper, and then they buy it at that price, which is the one that is at the fortune.
And then once they buy it at that price, all the surplus are gone out of the market. Then you are able to sit comfortable between those two lines. And that, in a way, keeps the farmer sustainable and the food security side, it keeps sustainable. Because once they buy out and then the price starts to react to go out a bit, they stop and they look elsewhere where it's cheaper. And then our price stabilizes those levels and then we're able now to continue at the pretty much of affordable level. But, like I said, this is the price where you buy the maize in the world. But you might be asking yourself, and if I say this is the price that you buy maize in the world, why are we way above the price which is available in the world? This reflects the scarcity of the white maize supply, in a way, in the world. Like you said, outside of Africa, it's Mexico that is largely producing out the most of maize in there. And in some of the conversation and trading platform, they've indicated to us that, you know, they might have supplies which about roughly 1.5 million tons of white maize that they might be able to put in the market. And if then that's the case, you can offset the demand that we have shown in there that, you know, South Africa will need roughly 1.1 million tons of maize. But the pricing of it is coming at around $245 a ton. And then you take a $245 a ton, it's already multiplied by 16, which is a rand. You add a 1,000 rand transport cost, it leaves you then to a price that is higher than that which is traded at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So to buy white maize in the world is still pretty much expensive than the one that is traded at the JSE here. So if then that's the case, you can't really say we rely on imports. You have to fix the domestic supplies to actually get the food security things right. So in all of these things, I think we have to just try to find measures to get the supplies right. And even the government feeding industry, the ones that are struggling to source all of this, I mean, they're buying it at fairly expensive prices. That green line in there is the price that they're paying in Argentina to actually buy a ton of yellow maize. And you will see it's roughly just below 7.7 a ton. It's fairly expensive, and I mean, you bring it all on this, your cattle are dying, you're losing stock, and you have to bring on that. So it is pretty much a challenging one. And I mean, we, in the way, all of us in this room will feel it when we're paying for our milk, for our polonies, for our chicken, and all of these things that we consume on a daily basis. But I think it's still interesting now, because for a price of a commodity, when it increases like this, to reach on your table and what you're eating, it has a level of around about 6 to 9 months to actually go through. Because he has to go through the milling stages, it has to be made, and then after it's gone through the milling stages, packaging and being distributed. And then when it comes to you, the cost might be even higher because, I mean, you're transporting, like Mr. DeVito has said, 85% of this is transported by road. You have your toll fees, you have your petrol costs that are actually getting, because the rent is not allowing us to enjoy the cheap bread prices and all of that. So there is that risk in there. And one thing that maybe I've forgotten to mention is when you go back to this other graph, if the price of a maize increased by the certain percentage, say for example here increased by 1/10% from a year ago, the price precision in there for things like maize meal is 50%. Of course, as a retailer, I'm not going to knock you off with a 50% increase in that price. You will run away. So we will gradually put those increases as we go. So those are some of the other things that you consumers can expect. And I mean, this is not only going to last this year. We are seeing that now. And if the lag is about 6 to 9 months, you can imagine if these prices of the raw commodity stay at a higher level until the end of the year or beginning of the year, then you're looking on into 2017 high for food price increases. So those are some of the things that one can expect to see as we go forward. And the other commodity that is important, maize is important, like we have just explained now, as a staple food, feeding on also in the other industries, in our meat and stuff like that. But wheat is also one of the very important industries in South Africa, if you look in that way, because all of most of the things that we are consuming, like we all know, are derived from the raw commodity of wheat. And our industry of late has not really been doing well. The wheat industry is under stress, and you see in those backgrounds on how, for example, we have taken here since 1990 going down, you see that we've actually been taking on in a downward trend. And part of it, of course, is the other issues, and also the one that Mr. Davis has highlighted, that there's a need for more increase within the research side. And in South Africa, we have focused more on the quality, but on the volume side, not so much. And I think that this is one of the things that we have to get it right. And we say that not only because it is nice to plant wheat, but if you look at the total consumption of Africa, because the more your economy increases, your middle class increases, the more they need some certain variety of the foodstuffs that they actually consume. And much of that, they will now say, okay, we'll eat the wheat bakes, we'll eat the biscuits and all of that. So all of those things that derived out of wheat, so that means your wheat competitiveness, you need to actually have your gains together in there. And you will see how our consumption has actually been increasing. As our economy is growing, consumption of wheat is actually also increasing in that way. But our production has been taking on in a downtrend, and I think that's one of the things that needs to be fixed. And I mean, if you take that on how much South Africa spends to buy wheat outside, it's pretty much that volume. But first, let me show you here. If you look in this graph, this is our percentage consumption of South Africa that actually is bought out. 60% of the wheat that we consume needs to be bought out, to be imported and then bring in South Africa. And if you look at 2014 on how much was spent to buy wheat outside and bring in South Africa, you're speaking of 5 billion rand that is spent outside. And I don't think South Africa can afford that luxury of having these capital outflows. We need to be doing much more on investing locally so that we can turn that around and be generating money from exporting those volumes. So I think that's one of the things that actually needs to be fixed. And in this year, like we said, this is a volume of wheat that we think that is also going to need to be imported. Just below 2 million tons. And in a way, depending on how the consumption also changing and observing what's going on in the maize industry, that can largely be changing to 2 million tons from about 195. But on that, we will be releasing our supply and demand estimates Wednesday next week, and anyone who's interested in those will find in a Grain SA's website when we receive other information to sort of plug on our estimates and revise them in there. And in a week again, if you look in the world, there's large supplies of wheat, and I mean, it's been like that since 2012, also in the global market. Wheat prices are fairly much at a stable, at softer levels, and they're expected to remain weak. But I don't think that South Africa can rely on that to say there's a large supplies of wheat, we can buy wheat in the world, because it's much cheaper because of the currency, and also you can't buy up, because if you're producing it locally, there are jobs that are involved that you can create in that process, and you can't have to cut sell out also going out to the other countries. And the other thing that is important to note is that we buy large volumes of our wheat from countries like Ukraine, Russia, and stuff like that. And in a way, sometimes there are geopolitical issues that happens in there, so you can't really be dependent on those countries and what's going on. For example, now Russia is looking at putting export tests to their farmers and making sure they don't send stuff out of the country. So those are some of the risks that you don't want to be involved in. And then if you leave them Russia, you go to buy it in higher price if you're buying from Australia and all of these other countries. So those are some of the other things that, you know, you need to be food secure in the country to produce for your own self-sufficient nation. And the risk of the rand, like I said, in the graph we're showing again the same thing that we showed on our main. In that green line, that's the amount of money that you actually spend to buy wheat from outside. And when you have to sell it out, that's the amount of money that you can actually do. But if you see over the years, we have been trading along that import parity price, import parity price, mainly because we are, you know, we're a net importing country on the wheat side. So those are some of the other things that have actually caused us to really rely and be on that side of the other thing. And this is what Mr. Villa was speaking about now on the tariff side. And this is a measure that is put out to sort of give an industry a base on the pricing side while we are still currently working on some of the strategies to revise the sector. Because the tariff is not put in place to increase prices or anything. It's actually there to make sure that when the global prices fall into lower levels, where now we miss it, not feasible for the domestic farmer to plant wheat and all of those things. You start to have the tariffs to sort of make sure that there's a certain base so that wheat farmers can be able to plant at least a slightly profitable rate and be able to be there. It doesn't set to at any cost that you would see in a bread and all of those things, as some maybe might have said. But again, there are delays that we are concerned about. For example, now the current tax that is actually placed on for someone who's importing wheat to South Africa is 9.11. And there was 911 rand per ton. But there was another one that is calculated on the 1st of December, which is 1,200 rand, and that is actually in there. But I mean, that is calculated in a way because global wheat prices have actually fell down significantly, so it's sort of like stabilizing the prices in a way. But that has not been corrected since then, and it's usually about 4 to 3 weeks for those things to happen, as you can see in the other red line. But now the delays have been much more further. And try to really put this in perspective, this is just a single loaf of bread, to see how much the farmer actually gets. Because one might say, yeah, these tariffs and these high wage prices, the farmers are getting really much, large amount of money. But in a loaf of bread, a farmer only gets 2 rand 38 cents. In a loaf of bread that you buy, it's around about 11 rand 76 cents. So it's only 4 slices that are accountable to the farmer. So large part of the other costs that are in there, it's in the value chain, but in there on our side as well, it's not like they take the money because they have the electricity tax that are involved with that, that they have to pay. They have the labor costs. They have the processing costs and all of those things. But on our side, it's roughly, you know, those 4 slices that we're responsible for. So those tariffs and all of those things don't, to some extent, you know, benefit the farmers or in that way. And so after all of this, I'm sure you'll be interested then to know how much exactly Central Africa really needs to import in total in all of this volume of the grain. And what we've came up with, assuming that what the CEC have forecasted does materialize, is that in total we will have to import just roughly 7.2, you can put it at 7.3 million tons of grain that might need to be imported, assuming that everything that we have sold in our supply and demand remain constant in that way. So if there's any change in any of the variables that in the either in production or exports import in a way, it will have to influence on this. And to put them in a much more now, you know, so that you may be in a much more readable manner, these are some of the other costs what we're actually estimating the situation will look like. In a maize, that's the 3.8 total that we're estimating. In a wheat, that's the 2 million tons. In rice, we're net importers of the rice. We're not producing any. That's our consumption, and we have to buy all of that from outside. In sorghum, that's what the percentage that we have on the barley side, that's what we are having on our S&Ds, and all the way up to peanuts, where we're expecting about 20,000 tons of peanuts that also might need to be programmed for things like peanut butters and all of those things to be processed in the can. So that's our preliminary estimates derived from the preliminary production estimates that we put out to us from this year on what the whole picture looking like. And of course, again, this then we'll have to, in a way, look at the logistical side to see if we will be able to bring this all in efficient time, at a rate that you might be needed on, given 85% of it is transported by road, as well as on the port side, to see that our port is really ready to bring in all of these volumes. And so I think these are some of the things that are still in discussion. And the currency, again, is going to be one of the things that is adding pressure. But in all of this, in the food price side, as we're closing, to sort of see what now is actually been the case. You may see that if we're looking on from today's prices, we say white maize has increased by roughly 80% on a year-on-year basis. We say that because we're already coming on from a high base. In 2015, maize prices started increasing about 60% it was around about the 9th or 10th of February. And now we're already past that date, we're coming from a higher base. Hence you see that the percentage has shrunk from what we had reported about last week or so. But if you look at it on a trend side, it's basically the same price levels that you are seeing. And on the yellow maize side, it's pretty much the same story. But as we said, any price increases on the white maize, 50% price transition in there that actually, you know, needs to actually get in. And these are some of the indices that you are already starting to see on the food price side. Maize prices already up by 22%, and this is the situation in all of the other sort of food products. Sorry for that. And we had to see some of the other increases in there, assuming that price level for around about 6 to 9 months of processing that stuff to actually get in. This shows you that, you know, the increases that we have seen on the commodities of the raw agricultural price haven't yet fully filtered through to the shelf and the retail store. So usually most of the Africans haven't really felt the drought in their pockets. And this is a thing that they're going to start to fill in as they buy in groceries in a month or 2 months to come or so. And maybe that's where you start to see the reaction also from the general public on this. But for now, people have pretty much been living in a fairly, you know, good way relative to what the situation is in the raw commodity side. But in closing then, this is the line that we also thought we should put out on what's the capacity that has actually been utilized in the ports in the previous few years. We've pretty much been utilizing roughly that volume within the grain side specifically, but the port authorities, they indicated in some of the meetings that, you know, they can bring in that, or even, maybe they can even go further higher than that, depending of course on some of the other logistical issues that are within the port. So that is yet to be seen on how the situation actually goes in there. And that's what we have on the supply side. Thank you.
thank you very much. Numbers, that was the presentation, detailed one. And thank you very much, Vanessa, for this presentation. Honorable members, I'm going to allow members to interact with the presentation by asking questions. No preambles, no speeches. Ask questions directly so that we get enough time to get answers of the question. Can we ask questions, Honorable Faye? Honorable Sultan and Paul.
Chairperson, obviously I have a lot of questions, but I'll stick to a few and I'll come back to the others. Chair, I want to firstly thank Grain SA for the presentation. I think it's a very sobering thought and very well laid out, dealing as I formulate questions in my mind, there the answer comes, so thank you very much. I think it gave us a very good picture of what's going on, but also, unfortunately, I think a very sobering picture. Chair, my questions would be, that was one of the first ones that I wrote down, it was one of the last ones that was covered there, is has South Africa ever had to import this amount of grain into South Africa? And I know you put in, we can't just say grain of all the imports that needs to come in, as you explained in that last one. And I saw the last few years of stats of imports and exports, but ever before, have we ever done it? Is this a new thing that will happen? And then you gave us the number of more than 7 million tons that needs to be imported in total. I will move then on to my next one. I am one of the persons that's a bit concerned about the vervroegde datum, the crop estimates that came out earlier. I'm concerned that it puts us in a bit of a false lull, whole situation mode, you know, it's not so bad, calm down, type of mode. I myself traveled through a whole section of the country. I'm still receiving on a daily basis imports from farmers on the ground on what the situation is and what time of the year, by when will we kind of have a reliable crop estimation so that we would know this is almost, you know, the number that we'll have to import, because I think it's quite important that we have some kind of a date that we're working towards. I wonder if you mind explaining us again the price, because that was my other question is the knock-on effect of the price increases is a long 6 months term or whatever. Why are we currently seeing that massive increase already? One of the slides that you showed that the price of white maize, yellow maize is already increased by quite a lot. What are the main reasons for that? And what do you think, if you must make a prediction, looking at the 5,000 rand a ton that you're already looking at, what would be the price of white maize be at the end of this year? Where do you think it will go to? Because I it's a difficult question, but I think it's quite important that we start planning for something like that, if it's possible to do. But you sound like a very clever man. It's very interesting to listen to that thing. Chair, my last question for this round. You talk about the 8 million rand that a farmer puts in, on average, into the ground to plant. And then, you know, if there's no harvest, it's a problem. And then you mentioned the 1 billion rand that's needed for new farmers. What would that amount be for commercial farmers? Have you made that kind of a sum? What would we need to... And my concern is, I share your concern. This year is one thing. But if our farmers go out of production because they don't make a harvest, nothing of their own fault, and they can't plant in the next season, I think we can sit with a bigger crisis, because even if we then have rain, the farmers won't have money to actually plant. So what kind of amount are we looking at? That's all for now. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. I must thank the Grain South Africa for letting the chair down to Cape Town to make this presentation to us very, very important and relevant at this moment. Just a couple of questions to Grace South Africa. If some of the questions sound like they should have been directed to the department, just bear with me. They are people from the department, though. You made a statement to say that, black farmers are battling to get loans because they do not own the land. What has been the Department of Rural Development's response to that? Because I would guess that you must have put that problem, communicated that to them, because they are the ones who are responsible for making sure that there's more land that gets transferred to blacks in South Africa. What has been their reaction there to? And then I also have in that portfolio committee. And now, critical one here. When did South Africa get to know that there was this big drought coming, the biggest that you said, the most of years since 1904. When did we get to know as a country that it was on its way and realize the severity that it could have come at? And you spoke about a potential migration of maize production from the from Mpumalanga down to the Eastern Cape. And you also gave us some stats showing that currently the Eastern Cape is the lowest producer member of that green color, which showed that Eastern Cape, it operated well. It's the lowest producer of maize. Now I'm aware of the vast land that is in existence, lying fallow in the Eastern Cape as well. Now, putting those two factors together, the possibility of migration and doing more production there, currently, what are the inhibiting factors that make the Eastern Cape to remain at the bottom? That this is the lowest producer of meat in South Africa with so much land. From your perspective, I nearly dropped dead when you said we haven't heard any threats from Mthatha, which is quite central on the eastern side of Eastern Cape, knowing as I do that there's even a, two development agencies, one being aligned to ORTAM and another one, Eastern Cape Development, Rural Development, based in East London. Why would we be right at the bottom? And have any preparations been started as far as you know, for that potential migration? Now, electricity, lack of electricity on farms, to what extent is it negatively impacting on the production of maize, if at all? I spoke to some, in the Maclear UK area in July last year, and they told me that Eskom was just not coming to the party, in a meaningful way, and that they were falling as a result. But maybe you've got a different picture. And lastly, Chair, this rand-dollar exchange, how extent do you think, how much more do you think government should make, available to increase maize production in South Africa, given the rand dollar exchange? We have the minister time and time again indicating that South Africa has got imports over 6 billion tons, But, to what extent is this going to have a knock-on effect on the budget of the state? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I also just have to thank Grant Issa. It was really such a complete and full, it's actually difficult to ask questions because you do form a question, but the answer is actually there. And I think we should also congratulate you for specifically your farm development fact sheets that you've produced, as well as the grain industry challenges that you are saying. That alone gives the answers, which are things that we can discuss in the committee and with the department afterwards. So once again, thank you so much. Just a question, your opinion. How do we fix the domestic supply of maize and wheat in the country? How do we fix that problem? The second one is, and I'm trying to be short here, as Steve is saying, if we look at the loaf of bread that we saw earlier on and the four slices, when we look at the four slices and the 2.38, how much of that is actually cost and how much of that is actually profit? Because it seems like we always think that, it's 2.38 profit, but how much of that is actually cost? Then what would the downstream or the knock-on effect be in respect of managing the soil moisture this current year for next year production and for the next 2-3 years production? And how long will this drought take? For how long will we have it? Then what is really of concern is that we are still operating on PTOs and that farmers are still not having land. This is something that we've been complaining about for the last number of years. It is impossible, we all know, to get a loan if you do not own the land. But also when there was use, when they made use of the PTO system, the PTOs would also, they would get it 6 or 7 months late and it is expiring in 2-3 months period. Is that still a problem? I don't sit on this committee full time, so that's why I just want to try and also just find out if it is indeed a problem. Then what support is farmers getting from the land bank and at what rate? Because that is also, I know there's always been a problem. Chair, I'll leave it at that and come back for a second time if we've got opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I also want to ask a question about the oysters contest. You made a very interesting reference to the fact that the plants need to go through that first layer to get to the water table. Now, what I want to know is the drought severe enough at this stage to have affected the water table? That's the one question. Then I would like to know, you referred, and I think it was you, the first presentation we had, to the fact that the Western Cape government is giving something like 70% assistance to farm workers. I would like to know, have you looked at the effect the drought has had on farm workers, and if so, what is the effect from them, and what kind of assistance is there for them in terms of government assistance? And then lastly, I want to know, I think as good as your presentation has been, I don't quite understand it. If this portion of the question I'm going to ask you now, you saying that South Africa provides the rest of the SADC countries with maize. Now, we've got a shortage and we've got to import. Now, what I want to know is everything that we are going to produce this year, will it stay here or what is the situation? Do we continue providing SADC and then import at the cost, or what is the situation? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Two things to you all and the economics, yes. For me, it will be important that we contextualize the problem and start to think how we're going to deal with it as we go forward. This drought is one of the phenomena of climate change, and we should then start to look at broadly and say the intervention that we need for now, how are we going to sustain the production as a country, so that you have food security, as we indicated. One is the part of the planning processes. Department has produced the ATAP, which is and grain is one of the commodities that is needed to be focused on. And I want to check in terms of the shortage, you have indicated the shortage and what is needed, how do we plan? Do we plan in line with what is, because I expected that the department would have discussed with Grain South Africa and agree in terms of the production itself to meet those targets that we put in the APEP and towards reaching those targets of the NDP, because that's where we should look at. So that's my question, that have you participated in terms of the shortage and other stuff besides the issues of drought, because already there's been a shortage, in terms of your interaction with the department, what is your understanding in terms of the intervention that will come forth? And secondly, is the issue that is raised by Honorable Carter in terms of the support of the farmers on land bank. I know that we have received the report from the department, but I can't remember how many millions that land bank has made available, particularly for this intervention. So can we confirm that to us? The issues, the other challenges that you've raised, I think was noted, and the issue of the rain is very critically important, particularly even in terms of reducing traffic on the roads. That is one of the things that we've been picking up as a committee. I think we will continue to pick it up with the other committees, particularly portfolio committee on transport. And one of the things that then department should do is to develop a map, the transport system within for our farmers, so that as we interact with other portfolio committees, particularly on roads and transport, we have the that map and the needs of our farmers, so that we don't just talk about one rain. Tomorrow there will be another rain for another community and all those things. I think it's important for us to be able to achieve those targets as we put in the NDP and the APEC. And the issue of land, we interacted with the minister, but from my side to say, at some point, minister, we just need to, because you are the custodian of the farmers, you need to establish a database of farmers that need land. And as a minister, he took that statistic to the rural development and said, these are the small farmers, commercial farmers that they want to expand in terms of our program, the acres. This is what we need in terms of the land to be able to get the production on. The last thing, which is very critical, the issue of the research. We have the ARC. Do we interact with them? What is their report? And science and technology. And those are our research institutes that govern funds which our farmers can utilize to get more assistance. Do we interact with them? last thing would the department wisdom must just note that the issue of protection of agricultural and land crucial. I think the sooner we process the legislation to protect that land for agriculture is very critical. We need that as soon as possible. I think that should become part of the priority of the department. I just thought that I must just raise this some few things. I think the issue of the drought, we have interacted with department. They've indicated where they make their input. But as a committee, we would actually follow up and go down to those farmers and get whether they've been assisted. and we know that some they're not in the database, some they're not interacting with anybody, they've lost livestock, they've lost their yield. So we have to see how we can even prioritize the issue of the database of all our farmers, including those emerging and the other element that as we go on is to look generally on the contribution of our society in general in terms of food security, to look at this issue of stabilizing the prices, to safeguard them from this fluctuation of prices and all those things. We need more education in terms of our society, and that to capacitate them in terms of what is important for them to succeed with food as we go on, because we don't know what this climate change is going to do, but we just need to have a plan. At some point, we're told that there is a the mic might have flood. This, the rain that we are creating and ending in March might bring the flood, which can affect our farmers. So, which means that we need more plans as we go forward in terms of adaptation and mitigation program. Thanks, CEO. You can.
Okay. It was one of my other questions, but it's not 100% the same question. I wanted to point out there was a mention made that, especially in the Free State, farmers will now massively, during winter time, move on to wheat production because they couldn't plant. What will that impact have on the water table and then also on the next season's maize plantation?
Can respond and share this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, you know, when I'm talking, I don't watch myself. I can send a note to Vandile, slow down, because I can hear the enthusiasm coming through. So I hope I didn't speak too fast. But this is, the game business is our passion, and we believe we've got a responsibility to help not just the farmers, but to make sure the country's got enough food. I'm going to try, and then I'm going to pass the ball to Wandile and some of the issues here. Quickly on the ports, if I start with the questions as it was put to me, I think theoretically we can do the tons that is needed at the moment. I understood from Wandile that Zimbabwe signed some deals with Mozambique, so it might be that their 1.1 million tons could probably go through Mozambique to Zimbabwe, and that would, you know, put a lot of relief on our system. What I'm trying to explain to people sometimes is we don't have a lot of storage at the ports. In Cape Town, in any case, almost nothing. We don't have a lot of storage at processing plant at the mills. They've got like 6 weeks of stock that they can carry in their silos. So now you're going to offload quicker than you're going to work the way this side. So you're going to have to store sometimes in between. And between Durban and Gauteng, we've received rain. So those silos are not empty. They're not going to be full either, but they're not going to be empty. So we're going to have additional cost to transport it maybe, you know, further away from that line between Durban and Gauteng to store it somewhere. And then when you store it, it's costing money. And remember, we took all the maize down to Durban full truck, then you pick up the wheat and you bring full truck back. That was 250 rand. Now everything is coming one way, 500 rand, because it's going empty down. So this is adding the cost to the structure, and this is why we said we should rather have enough food in the country. We don't have this sort of thing that we want to export this stuff. Enough. So I think theoretically we can import it. The market can make a plan. It's amazing sometimes how they find a way and do it. It's a mess in Durban. You know, when all those trucks get there, they don't park in space. They park on the sideways and all over. They get like R1,000 a day ticket, but they sit there. They take the ticket because they can't move the truck. There's no ablution facilities for drivers. You know, they're in trouble. So, yeah, but they can't leave the truck. But, Madam Chair, we've got to find a way to get it done to make sure that they put enough in the country. So we might have, you know, a day or a week where there's going to be a factory that is going to run out of maize and they're waiting for a truck or something like that. What I've raised with some of the colleagues from National Intelligence Services who contacted us about the risks of this, if we have a strike of the truck drivers like that in 2012 for 3 weeks, we'd be in trouble. In big trouble. Because if the trucks are not moving, you know, we're not going to have the food in the factories and the processing sector. So this is the risk about 2016 in terms of our the logistics. I took the presidency down to Durban twice last year. In February I took them down and again in April. And in the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, they have scheduled to deepen the ports at the grain elevator specifically for 2024 and 2025. So the ships that we're bringing in is small ships because it's not deep enough at the grain elevators. And we need to deepen that port so they can bring bigger ships in. The bigger ships you can discharge quicker and you can load them quicker. You're more efficient in the world. You compete when you're exporting and it's cheaper when you bring it in. So what I've asked the presidency is can't we try and, you know, bring that a bit forward and deepen those ports quicker so that if there's a drought, and that was last year, I didn't expect the drought to be so severe, ma'am.
But when this year happened, I mean, obviously now we sit and we say, yes, you know, couldn't have done it earlier. But I think those are things that in your policy formulation and where do you spend the money in the infrastructure side, this is a critical element for our food security. Have good ports that can take grains away so that we produce enough that we can keep it at the low prices, and if we've got shortages that we can bring it in quicker. The crop estimate, I think, you know, it was brave for them to come out with a crop estimate in January. Our own estimate was a little bit lower than that, but as I said, the farmers planted like, you know, huge number of hectares. So we're comfortable that 2 million hectares that they've estimated is probably there. I think on the sunflower we will find that it will go up. The farmers have planted into February in the deep northwest. They're not so scared about the frost, and the frost can't harm the sunflower as in maize because it dries off quicker. The sunflower is also tougher than the maize. So I think the sunflower will see an increase. We might see the 7.4 come down a little bit, pending on the next 10 days of weather. Guys, we in the northwest and the northwest freeze the next 10 days. If we don't get rain, those little maize is not going to make it. Some of the early plantings are pollinating, so we need lots of water to put the, you know, to put the kernels on the cobs. If we don't get rain in the next 10 days, we're going to see a substantial reduction. And then we're going to go down to 6 million tons. And then we need to import like 5 million tons. And now you're putting lots of pressure on it. So when we will know when, this is always a difficult thing. I think, you know, April and May is, by May we always know that, you know, then the numbers are sort of almost like final. But for now, between now and when the plants are still grown, you need rain, and we don't know about the rain. So we're still in trouble. We don't know until late April, they say beginning of May, then the crop is almost there, and then we will know the numbers much more accurately. I will ask Cornelia to respond to where the price is going. and we know in terms of the future contracts on the stock exchange, we know what is the prices in the new month. Cornelia, you will just note that one. Then on the inputs, as I said, an average grain farmer used probably 8 million tons of inputs. I've calculated the 1 billion rand that I think we need for our new farmers. We haven't done a specific calculation for the grain sector per se. What we've done together with AgriSA at one stage was to say, what will the commercial sector need? And that includes the cattle and the sugar guys and those things. And I mean, they come up to an amount of something like 12 billion rand in a middle scenario. So that doesn't mean it's really bad. But I think, you know, the farmers are tough. They know how to get to this thing. You just need to help them a little bit. So I think there are some farmers, not all the farmers need help, because some in Mpumalanga, they've done exceptionally well. They said it's the best year ever. They've received above average rain in Delmas this year. The maize looked fantastic. The soya beans, excellent. And you know, so it's not all the farmers that do. There are, I think the agribusiness has calculated 450 farmers on their books jointly that won't be able to get a loan next year. They're in trouble. So those are good farmers. The banks all said to us, it is not a farmer problem this year, it is a weather problem. We need to deal with the weather. So it's not that they're bad farmers. I think if those farmers can get some guarantee, so you don't need to give them cash, so that they can sort of just extend the debt a little bit that they can plant next year, hopefully they will get out of trouble. I mean, none of us can predict the weather next year. We heard about, you know, it will be a good year next year, but I mean, it's not guaranteed. It's always difficult. So what are we doing about the loans and the title deeds and land reform reaction? I think in our land reform discussions, this is always the issue. By, you know, don't make a squatter of somebody by letting him live on the government land. Give him the land. They're good enough farmers. They can be criteria. Say, if you have done this and this, you know, sell the land to the guy. He will be able to get a loan. So as a country, we've really got a challenge. What we said to each other in the great business is, you know, we're not going to fight the chiefs in this country. It's going to take too much time and too much energy to try and convince the chiefs that they must give a PTO to somebody that is like six years or something like that. Because if you go with a permission to occupy of a period and it's guaranteed, that guy can go to somebody and say, right, you know, the crop is not going to disappear tomorrow because the chief is going to kick me off here. Because this is what sometimes happens. The bank said, I don't insure you because somebody else can can take the piece of land tomorrow because the chief can change it. And I think these are the challenges that we have. So the insurance people are just running away. Even the input people, they said, I can't take your crop as collateral because I'm not sure whether the crop's going to be there. They're going to be roaming cattle around, you know, and they eat the maize. And so somehow we need to overcome this problem. And I know that there's been a lot of money spent on the fencing in the Eastern Cape, for instance, to try and keep the cattle out of the fields and those sort of things. But you can't, you know, at the moment, a rule of thumb is 10,000 rand a hectare. That's the input cost for these smaller farmers. You can't put 10,000 rand in a hectare and then let your, you know, the cattle of the neighborhood run through it and you've got nothing left. I mean, who's going to pay back the debt? So I think this is really a challenge for land reform to say, yes, we want to transfer the land. Yes, make sure that it's the right farmers that can really farm the land. And yes, have a plan at the back that says if government buys a piece of land, within 5 years you will be entitled to buy back at the original price or something like that. Have a system like that. That will bring the sustainability in our program, I believe. And as I said, we've got plenty of farmers that's been well trained that can do that. When did we know about a drought? I think we work on the windows. We believe us. We have hoped that the rain would come. I mean, there was all these bad predictions. But when it becomes the middle of November in Mpumalanga, you're outside of the window, then you start worrying about the flood in April. So in Mpumalanga, we knew by the 30th of November, you know, now we're in trouble in that side. Although they've planted 95%. And the western side, when it became Christmas, man, I was in trouble. That was the day that I really realized we're not going to have a full crop at all. There was no chance. Because even if the rain came late, with this capacity that we have to plant so many hectares in a short space of time, we can do it like until the 42nd of December. The farmers talk, they said they don't plant and harvest in the same year. They talk about the 42nd of December. So if we come to the end of December, that's when we knew it's now gone. It's too late. This is the problem. You want to ask a question? Okay. Thank you. Migration to the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape hasn't got silage. So the moment you harvest the surplus, even on 1 hectare, you've got 4.5 tons. What do you do with the 3.5 that you've got storage at your home for 1 ton because you know you use that in a year. But as a family, what do you do with the 3.5? There's no roads. The trucks don't want to go there. You know? So the infrastructure is really one of the big hampers. The style structure, we went to Sasol, and they said they will manufacture us a polymer silo. It's like 5 to 7 tons. It's like a JoJo tank, but it looks like a silo. That we can take into these deep rural areas, that they can store it in a better way to maintain it well. There's problems in the Eastern Cape with mycotoxins. It is a fungi that grows on the maize. If you don't store it properly, it gives you cancer at the end of the day. So if you haven't got proper storage facilities, you're actually contaminating the people with diseases or, you know, those sort of problems. So we really need to improve our silos stuff. That the market will move there as soon as the production is there. So the input provider will come. The moment the farmers start planting, they will start supplying and they will move in. But we need transportation to get it out there. The road is not in a good state. You know, there's no railway up there. Closed some of the railway lines there because there's no traffic for a long time. So back to the rail issue, ma'am, it's definitely something. But the farmers are ready. They will be able to do it. The electricity story, the more irrigation maize we produce, the more stable is the production. They always there. The heat might be a problem there. So what we had at one stage of the Orange River is that when we had the load shedding, they will start all the pumps and they will pump it into the channels. And then the water will run in the channel, and by the time it gets to the end of the channel, the electricity goes off, so this farmer can't pump. And then the water runs into the river again. So when you have load shedding, you actually put your whole irrigation system also at risk. I'm not just talking about the spikes of, you know, the machine that or the equipment that is breaking down, but if sometimes and when it's so hot in December, when the maize is growing, you need to put down a lot of water to keep them going because you plant 90,000 plants per hectare. They stand like hair on end. Um, what should government help us with in terms of the maize? I think I've tried to list the issues. What is it that, you know, research, and I mean, we can sit down and talk about the funds, and I will talk about the ARC in a moment's time. But I think there's maybe something that we can do for this season, but I don't think in general the industry needs a lot of assistance from government other than a proper framework to work with it, of which private property helping us to make the market work and getting the loans and those sort of things. Our farmer development program, the challenges, how do we fix the maize and the wheat thing? The wheat, we worked on the APAP program with the department. We have got some funds from DST to improve on the yields of the wheat, and there's really a lot of focus at the moment on the wheat system to try and improve so we don't get so dependent on the wheat. So there's really a lot of good work that has been done around that. The maize, I think it is a seasonal thing. I don't think the maize is always in a surplus. You know, we intended to plant 2.5 million tons. We were ready to do that, but the rain didn't come. That was the issue there. Yeah, the four slices of bread, you have seen one of the four was a very thin one. That was probably the profit part of it. The four slices is the cost that is going to the farmer. So from that, you need to take off your fertilizers and your diesel and all of those sort of things. So yeah, the profits, I think there are numbers out somewhere that we can try and help you with the exact numbers. I don't have it at the end there. I think I spoke about the PTOs. The support from the land bank side. At the moment, the land bank's got a product that they call, you can become an intermediary. You can borrow from the land bank at zero, and then you unlend at 4%. And this is going to be very helpful if we can get it for grains. But they said we're too risky. So there's not a lot of farmers that is getting money from land bank because they said we don't have ownership of the land. They've got no security, so they can't do it like that. And I think this is where, if we've got a guarantee at the back from government, then they can do something like this. We're working on a program for next season to start funding, because now I've got that 1,100 farmers in mind that own more than 50 acres, so that we can help them with loans. So the land bank hasn't helped the grain industry. I don't know, I think in the cattle industry they've done some work through NERPO, the Red Meat Producers Organization, but on the grains, the land bank is not at the moment big helping us, but they know that, and I thank you for putting pressure on them, because they pitched at our offices and say, how can they assist us? So please keep up the pressure, it is definitely moving. Just again on the moist levels, not all the countries land is water table land. It is mostly the Northwest Free State and some parts of Northwest. You go into Mapumalo, it's sand soils. The water goes in and just comes out. But in the heart of our production area, especially our white maize area, this is where the water table is, like Bessels Bron and Bultfontein going up to Swaziland, all those areas that I drove to. So they've got this water lying there, and then they need something to just get the plants through to the base. So when you, what the farmers have learned, and there's a lot more fallow land system where they rest a land, they don't plant to maintain the moisture there. So then they need only a little bit, and then they can plant in the next season. So I'm not concerned. When you plant wheat, the country needs wheat. The farmer needs an income. You know, he's got some expenses. So I think if they plant more wheat in the future, the Free State produces a lot more wheat than the Western Cape in the past. We were almost self-sufficient in wheat. So the Free State got out of it because maize is more profitable, soybeans is more profitable, so the farmer shoots to that. But now that they didn't plant, they've got the land. If there's good land, they will plant wheat. That's good for the country. So it's not necessarily that. We've got enough land to cover to make sure that there's enough maize. I'm not too concerned about that specific issue. The Western Cape, I must just try again, the farm workers. So my thing is that even organized agriculture came to government and say, you know, we don't want to lay off farm workers. Is there a way that you can subsidize their wages, you know, even if it's from the UIF fund, because there's lots of money available there. I know Treasury will not like it, but this is the stuff that I think will help us not to lay off people. You know, you help the guy who actually is well registered with government, he's got all his books in order. You know, if you give a subsidy to his wage for 6 months or something to just help the farmer to get into the next season, because at the moment they're not getting income, but they have to pay the wages. So I know that there will be layoffs, you know, going into the next season if there's no assistance specifically. And we know the agriculture sector is the one who can give,
employment to low-skilled people, and we've got plenty of those in South Africa. So I think there's a possibility. The Western Cape one is definitely working well. We've got a guy here, Werner Dirks, Genaris Wurfarm here in the Western Cape, I mean, this is a young colored chap. He's doing extremely well. We've now enrolled him with Wandile in the Rain Academy so he can, you know, boldly ship stuff with him. But, I mean, Werner, he started laying off some of his farm workers, and I mean, this is sort of his third season as a commercial wheat farmer. And this is, I think this will definitely help him if there's some assistance like that. Madam Chair, I'm not moving fast enough here. SADC, the imports and the exports, SADC will only buy from South Africa if they can't get it cheaper elsewhere. So it might mean, you know, we always regard the BLNS, Botswana, Namibia, Swaziland and Lesotho as part of the South African market. They always buy it from us, but they buy it at the prices that we are buying as well. So I don't think that the SADC countries will buy from South Africa if their prices are too high. They might be able to get it, you know, cheaper, and they will probably get some food aid stuff that is for free, and they will probably go for that. And remember, members, there's no difference between white maize and yellow maize in the nutritional value. It's just the color. But we like the white maize. I mean, like Wandila, I grew up on the Free State. I eat my pop every day. I love it, and I like the white. But, I mean, you won't die or something like that in terms of eating yellow, but I know that people don't like it. So I think in SADC you might find if they can't afford it because the white maize is so expensive and it's not readily available, they might switch over to yellow maize. And them may have done it in the past when we had the high food prices in 2007, 2008. And I mean, South Africa also done that, but we don't like it that much. How do we deal with the droughts that come? Ma'am, we need to sit down and say, what are the steps? When we get to the 21st of December, we know we're in trouble. Because that will always be sort of the date when we know what is the situation. I think we should have some plan and try, you know, let's tick these five or six boxes and say, we need to do this, and this to get everything ready. What we can do in the meanwhile is learn from this, you know, get our ports ready, get our railway system again going, make sure our resources focus on yields, and on drought tolerant, heat tolerant, get the black farmers to produce. I mean, yes, we need to fix this. It's 20 years down the line. We're still not getting our black farmers into production. They're ready. They've been trained. They've been study groups. They've trained all these things. And they've got land, but they can't get finance. There's this, sorry, again, the story. And we're with you. We want to get to the National Development Plan. We sat down with the department on the APEP, and we looked at these things. There's a whole issue now around how can we bring in white maize from America that we're trying to work with government to make sure that the farmers are not in a disadvantage, but that the country is not being penalized either. So, ma'am, I don't think we've got all the answers for that. I think we've realized that the drought is going to be bad, but I think it was worse than we've expected. We optimists as grain farmers, you know, because of this thing of planting, and you just hope that the rain will come. But somehow we probably need to sit down and say we haven't got a proper enough plan to make sure that there's food security. Now, remember, the market will make sure there's enough food in the country. The bigger challenge is the affordability thing. How are we make sure those people in the deep rural areas, I mean, I saw some maize meal prices yesterday in some of the shops in the deep rural areas. I don't know how these people can afford it. It's going to be very tough. And I know it's not just agriculture's job. This is more social, and I don't know where exactly in which cluster it falls. But we're going to be in trouble as far as the food prices are concerned. And I think somehow we need to sit with private sector and say, what is it that you can do? How do we get over this yield? Because it's not just, you know, a permanent thing necessarily. You need to get over the yield. But I appreciate your support for the railway systems. I think we've been talking to them for a long time. And somehow, if public enterprise can give them a mandate and say, listen, we need you to step up in terms of your grain transportation. You know, even if you cross-subsidize coal with, you know, take money from coal and help the grain to be cheaper. Then, remember, if railways is cheaper, then the road transportation will bring down its price because this is its competition. But there's no competition at the moment. They just push the prices on this side. So it will also help us a lot if we can get that done. The database, we had discussions with the Department of Agriculture. We're willing to share the 8,000 farmers that we've got, you know, their names and their data and the detail that we've got about them. And I assume there's some of the other commodities that also got some good data that that department. You don't have to go and recreate the wheel. It's difficult to get those guys and all those data going and have a system that is frequently there. But, I mean, we're not losing anything by sharing that. So I think this is some area where we can really work together. Then I want to just conclude on the research. It is not going well with our Agriculture Research Council. The money that they get is not enough. The capacity is not there any longer. We're not sharp-edged, you know, research that's taking the farmers forward. So what is happening is that there are lots of money flowing around the ARC at the moment. They're still the primary source of research, but we are establishing network, we call it consortium, where we pick the best three guys in one discipline, whether they work for the university or the CSIR or one company for that matter or the ARC. We link those, and those are the consortiums that we fund. We don't just give money to the ARC and say, you know, just go ahead and do whatever you like. So I think we also need a bit of a revamp, I think, where we're heading for that. And DSC is helping us a lot with this. They're making funds available, and they said, go and manage it and make sure the right people are doing the right research so that the farmers can benefit at the end by increasing their yields or having less spray on their crops or whatever to bring down their costs. So if you can just say amen on your issue about the protection of our agricultural land. This is food security. If we're not taking this seriously, our next generation will be without food, and they're going to blame us for that. They're going to eat coal. They're not going to eat pop. So if you want to visit some of these farmers, obviously we open you. You can contact us anytime. We'll take you there and see what is it, you know, so that you can get in touch with them and find out from them. I mean, they have very frequently study group meetings in all these rural areas, where we train them and help them to become commercial farmers and commercial yields, getting commercial yields. So, ma'am, we don't have all the answers, but we've got a will to make it work. We want to make the country successful when it comes to food, because then we know it's stable and the economy can go. People's belly are full. They can go and get educated. I'm not so sure whether we give free education and not, you know, food, having food that you can still do it, but this is the, you know, we spoke to Eskom at one stage and said, yeah, you can give electricity to the mining sector, but if they don't have food and the mills are not running, you know, it is of no use going down the mine and try and find some gold there. You must first have something in your belly, and then you can go down and do your job properly. So thank you very much, ma'am. I think there's a few that you can also answer.
Thank you. Just sort of a quick one on the pricing side. Look, one of the first fundamental things is towards December, the stocks are already low because we're going on towards the end of the market year, which is the end of April. So that alone sort of gives you a part on the prices that you can expect that just even in a normal year where you don't have drought, you can expect prices to be slightly higher levels at that time. But if you look now at the futures levels, you see that white maize is still around about 4.5 when you focus and you're looking at that time. Yellow maize is still around about 3.5. But what's important though in this is to know that if you're going to be a net importer for that year, that means that your prices will remain at the import parity price.
But not increase.
Yeah. We are already at a higher level now, so you can expect the prices to stabilize at the levels that we are in. You can't really expect further much increases from where we are sitting, because the market is, except the exchange rate changes or there's a change on supply side. But having factored all the factors that we have displayed it now, you can expect really a sideways movement in the prices that you're seeing. Thanks.
I know that answer provoked questions. I'm going to give one question, one, and then we close. Start with Mr. Martin.
Thanks, and thanks for the responses. I think we here in this portfolio committee, you learn a new thing every day when you come, you know. So this issue of security is very important. You know, I've listened to your responses, quite enriching, very empowering. I think there's a part that seems to be leaking. The government of the Republic of South Africa has got a number of interventions including on how they deal with the problem of rain. One such is, or two of those would be just top of my head, would be desalination that the Department of Water Affairs is attending to, and water harvesting. So because it is important to understand how those are contributing to this space as well, because like rightfully said, if we desperately need to harvest water only to save hungry stomachs, I don't think we're really addressing the problem of miners who will go down without food, you know. But secondly, again, the same similar question about electricity. There has been all forms of alternative energy, because we need to understand, you see, the NDP chair pronounces a lot of some of these interventions, how you do, you know, your green energy space and all of that, you know, putting in your solar panels in the farms to make sure that you run your irrigation system. It's important that we are also told so that, because what we've been trying to do, and I think this point is further reinforced by what we're raising on transport, has been to try and have a joint portfolio committee engagement as well with those different portfolios that also impact on our work, you know. So you find that what some of the things we are raising, you know, the natural problem we've got of rain has got a lot to do with what the Department of Water Affairs is doing. You know, the problem of energy, for instance, has got a lot to do with how they are dealing with the water summit now in the country to deal with that, you know, even on the freight logistics side. So I felt, Chef, as well, was speaking, I just got a little bit agitated and felt that maybe we could be educated better on this one.
Yeah. My question is focused on cost cutting of price at the end of the day to the consumer. I'm concerned by this 85% of price that or maize that usually went on rail. Did you done a study? Did you do a study to find out if we move all the maize via rail and not on transport, will it make a big impact or not? Except, I'm not talking only about the roads and protecting the roads, but cost-wise. Because I'm really concerned, Chair, that the food crisis is going to be a massive crisis later in the year. So I'm trying to look and think of things that we can think of as a portfolio to talk to other portfolios about implementing something to at least just look at containing the we can do nothing about the imports and the rand and whatever, but the things that we can do something about. Thinking maybe from the harbors and on all of that, if there's anything on the system that we can look at proposing that will cut the cost, not to make it easier or whatever specifically, but time is money.
Thanks for the second point. I asked a specific question as to when did South Africa get to know that we were going to be hit by this intense drought? Your answer seems to be saying that October, November, December. I don't know if I understood you well or whether you understood my question well. I thought that with the levels of research would have known quite earlier than that. That's why I say maybe my question was not well communicated or well understood, so I would love to get an answer to that. But more importantly, in closing, is you mentioned that something critical, we also look for solutions as a committee. You mentioned that, you know, you feel that if a government would guarantee, you know, what black farmers' loans, you know, to tune up a billion rands, that would help, and that would circumvent the problem they are currently facing of getting no land security, you know, in the form of title deeds. I just want to be sure that you understood you very well there, because if now you work as Grain South Africa with the local development agencies, you know, that would work very, very smoothly. So I don't know if you have got any relationship with the regional development agencies that have got anything to do with the, you know, farm production. Thank you.
Honourable, yes?
Thank you, Jay. Jay, just to also just like to ask, I serve on the Department of Transport, on the DOT, and this is something that we speak about continuously, that the rail, and I really believe, because firstly, if we can get the trucks and the vehicles on the roads, we would not have the amount of deaths that we have on the road. So those are wanted. So I would really propose that we have a meeting, a joint meeting with the Department of Transport as well. My question is just, I can clearly remember in the early 90s, 1991, 1992, there was also a major problem, and if I look at some of the graphs today, it is just where the supply was the lowest of low that even reflected on the graph. Prices went up, I remember Mealie Meal itself going up from between 8 Rand and 9 Rand for a 10 kg bag, went up into the 20s and first to 30 Rand overnight. But the market never really recovered after that. So it is not that it was short term. There was exactly the same with the coffee plantations that burned down in Brazil at the same time, where coffee went up from 9 rand a tonne up to 20 something rand a tonne as well. But the prices never came down. But are we seeing this to be, will it definitely have a long term effect, or will it just be a short term effect that will come right after a couple of months? Or how long will it take? Or are we going to sit with a major problem that is going to be a long term effect of unaffordability? Thank you.
Honourable Sultan, it's just I assisted the CEO to respond to your question on when did the drought been discovered. That part of the problem that we have is that South Africa and the world discovered this, the lack of putting measures to deal with climate changes. Caused South Africa, all the world, the problem in terms of your drought, your El Nino, and all the other things. So, and one of the things that South Africa participated, starting from Durban, and until Paris. So, what needs to happen in this country is for all the sectors, not agriculture only, to look at this issue of climate change, take it very seriously, adapt to adapt and mitigate these challenges that we might face in the near future. And I know that what we need to do is that we need the Department of Agriculture to move ahead of when we're in Paris. Actually, we've discovered that agriculture as a sector throughout the world have not actually deal with this issue as a sector. and therefore we need the agriculture to sit down and look at the issue of climate change and to start to say, how are we going to affect it, and what are the adaptation that we need to go into, and mitigation factors that need to be put in place. And there will be UN and other organizations, they are putting money aside to assist countries who have plans. So it's upon us as agriculture to move very fast, to develop our own strategy in terms of dealing with this climate. I just thought I responded in a question to say that to check whether there is that interaction, because they can only win that if there is a proper interaction with the department and there is the understanding of the needs of the farmers by the department and how they respond to those challenges. So that's what I wanted just to clarify. But I think it's important, the issue of the effect is important in the sense that as you adapt, you need to have, then you have to have develop new technology. We need to have those conservation that you need to go into. How then do you assist all the farmers to understand those new concepts, which is part of the thing that as we go on we have to work on. So you can respond on other issues.
Thanks, Chair. On the rain harvesting issues, I don't think I'm that strong to really respond properly on that. The issue of what is the English word that you say when you manipulate the clouds, is that what? Desalination. All right. Ah, okay, okay. Now, I thought you're talking about those things that they shoot into the clouds to make rain and stuff like that. All right. Yeah, I'm not... I think you know, some of them are moral issues, you know, because you can harm somebody up by sitting in rain, but I think the Madam Chair, no, I mean, there's a tune there. Yeah, those guys, so if the cloud over your farm, you shoot stuff in it, and within 15 minutes it starts raining, and then the neighbor should have got it, and he doesn't get anything, you know, because it would have been shared amongst them. Yeah, rain set. Yes, see, that's a new word. I'm also learning something here. Now, I think those stuff for me is like a moral issue, because when you have an intervention that is advantageous to somebody and disadvantage to somebody, I'm not so sure, you know, whether you've got it. But I think the point you're making, that South Africa needs to look more carefully towards our water resources and how we use it for food. I mean, Professor Karang taught me another thing the other day. He said, you know, which product that we manufacture uses the most water? We should actually import them, you know, because it is cheaper than maybe the import, because we don't have enough water. Now, we haven't done a study like that and say which products are really to be considered, and that I think Egypt is doing something like that because of the water scarcity there. And I mean, I would appreciate a joint committee meeting with transport will help us. The biofuel is another issue that is a sort of an agriculture-energy connection. We were ready to do biofuels with sorghum, and that was when the oil prices were like, you know, $80 and $100, and I think we were almost at the point where the minister signed off on the biofuel policy. We have trained farmers. We have planted sorghum trial plots in the Eastern Cape because of the product plant that IDC was putting down there, and we were almost ready to start doing that, and then, you know, the oil prices started falling, and then we realized that this is not going to happen overnight. I think as grape farmers, we're also sensitive to this thing about food versus fuel. So, you know, if we don't use maize, I don't think this country should do it. But, I mean, there are different opinions about it. But we can use soya beans for diesel. We can use sunflower for the diesel. We can use sorghum. Sorghum is more indigenous. It's tougher than maize. You know, it can grow in the drier parts there in Northwest, probably better than maize in some instances. We don't have a market for it at the moment, so the biofuel will definitely help us. On the cost of, you know, if we switch back to 85% on the rail, we haven't done a study that I can quantify today and say, you know, it's going to make cost food prices 5% cheaper or so. But we know from the past that there was traditionally a 25% gap between road transportation and rail transportation costs. Now you can calculate, you know, the transport in a total food basket is probably 50%, of which half is fuel. You know, so it will be meaningful, you know, if I just use the sort of broader numbers, but we haven't got the details of that. When did we know? Sir, it was predicted, but we didn't believe in. We farmers. It was predicted way before the season started. The banks came to us and said, right, we've looked at this. We are making money available, but we want to warn you there's a below-average rainfall expected for the planting season. And they said to us, in March, we might find some rain. That's what the model said, looking at the sea temperatures and all of that. So we prepared, and we believe that it will come. It came late in Mpumalanga, it came very late in Northwest. So we didn't plant full. The farmers were saying, we're not going to plant everything. We're going to have a crop rotation system. We're going to plant sunflower instead of maize, because sunflower can be planted later. It's tougher. We've sold all the sunflower seed way before the season started. So the farmers have done some adaptation, but we still have the belief that the rain will come. And we have to do it that way. We can't sit and wait in the day when the rain starts. Now we want to go and organize crop finance and seed and fertilizer, those sort of things. But when we as a country know we're in trouble is when the window of opportunity planting is over. That's the date. Christmas is the date when you know we've planted or we haven't planted. Now we're in trouble, we're not in trouble. The guarantee of 1 million rand, 1 billion, sorry, yeah, 1 billion rand, this is the security then for people that don't have the land security. I think if you give the land bank a tool like that, it will unlock those 4% loans. And what we do jointly with land reform is, if they can then
give a grant for the mechanization to buy the guy a tractor and a plant and a sprayer, and he can loan the rest of his inputs, he will be able to pay back easy because he's doing the right things. Well, obviously the rain must come. I can't predict that. But the rest of it, if they do that, I think the system will work really well as far as that's concerned. The maize prices, on the SAGAS website, we publish every month the stats of Africa prices that they use in the food basket. And over time, you can see, and it's there for since, I think, 2000. So there you will be able to see that it sometimes comes down as well. And that's the positive thing. In the maize business, there's enough small maize mills to bring down the prices. They suffer when it is so high, the prices are so high, because they have to buy high this side, and their debtors book on this side double, so their cash flow need is double what they normally do. So the small mills get out of business when it is tough times like this. Not only the big guys buy, but the moment the market drops, then the big guys sit with long positions and high prices still in their system, and the small guys just go like this. So then the prices tend to go down. So there is evidence that the prices do come down, but it takes time. That's definitely the case. All the sectors must work together on the climate change. Thanks for that. I agree with you. I can't agree more. Just a number that you might jot down. We've done a survey in South Africa. How many farmers are on this conservation agriculture thing? And we got to 40% of the hectares, 40. So, and we have got a specialist in our office, Dr. Henrik Smit. He's a specialist in this area. He's formed all sorts of study groups and people doing trials on this so that the farmers can adapt it quicker. But I think this drought is going to make it even more forceful for the farmers to move better. And the small guys, the 1 hectare guys that they do, they start with conservation. They don't plow. We learn them from the beginning the right stuff so that they can preserve the moisture. We call it moisture management on the farm. This is this conservation agriculture thing. And then the last thing, just I think agriculture department approved the other day under the GMO Act for Monsanto to do a drought-tolerant variety test. This is only the second country in the world that is doing this. America has approved it already. We're the second country that is doing it. And they said in 2018-2019 season, we will have it commercially if all the tests are good for the country. So there is some hope in the pipeline. It's just you know, quite a long way to overcome. But, man, we have to keep on believing that the rain will come next year. You know, but I also believe that we need to prepare better as a country. We know these climate change things, and this is why they migrate some of our production towards the east, keep it in the you know, the coastal areas where there's more rain, it's good soils. We must just get the communal land into production, please. Help me with that. Thank you, ma'am.
I think it's
weird.
It was more informative, CEO, and we'll actually take it up with the department that's engaged with them. We'll continuously ask questions in terms of challenges that you've raised in your presentation. And thank you very much for availing yourself to come and press the comment. Thank you very much. Members, that was the presentation, and we have not actually noted the apologies. We have received apologies from Honorable Sango Kulu, who has got the family funeral. We have Honorable... Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much. We have Honorable Masakwani, who has got a meeting in Eastern Cape. We have Honorable Ndaisa and Paulson with they've indicated they will not be with us. I just thought we must note those apologies before we close. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
seker maar verskille en maar vir my is dit van ek moet in die story nou gaan so vir my is dit dat 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 ek eindelijk dat die volgende 10 dag alle kritiek is vir reënval en sorry maar dat die einde april en die einde april voor ons dan een goede idee kan gee waar ons dan in termen van hoeveel ons how much we can support it because at the end of it we will know how big our costs are and how they're shipping it up and how big the harvest is and then we'll have a clear idea how this cost of the product is and obviously they're very concerned about the product of the harvest is going to be